Andrews? Have you pressurized the police? He's not investigating, Andrew.
He feigned deafness, but it shows how the story's growing. Plus, move out of Westminster, or it'll take 60 years to repair. Where should Parliament go? And... to the Winter Olympics, and winning a ski jump could be a matter of just inches. How male competitors are injecting acid into their genitalia to get a foot ahead. Those stories and more follow the story I've never done before. The 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Prime Minister remains under intense pressure from his own MPs over the Peter Mandelson scandal. Sir Keir Starmer's admitted he knew of Lord Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, but says he repeatedly lied about the extent of it. Sir Keir has been forced to hand over files on his appointment as US ambassador after a major backlash. Labour MP Col Turner has told LBC the Prime Minister needs to revise his team of advisers.
We're angry about advisers getting it wrong. Warn the Prime Minister to do better. We think he'd do better without the team around him as it currently exists. Look, I'm not pretending that he's going to listen to the advice I give him. I don't think he does. He's ignored it several times. I was with him in his private quarters in Downing Street not so many weeks ago. I told him then that the PLP were unsettled. I told him that those people starting to be angry, and I told him why.
Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. The United States and Iran are due to start talks in Oman later as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear program. It's the first direct discussions between the two countries in 8 months. President Trump's repeatedly threatened military action if no diplomatic solutions found. Iran has said it's willing to discuss the nuclear issue, but not additional demands. The government says nearly 60,000 illegal migrants and criminals have been deported since the general election. Figures show 15,000 were removed while 43,000 others left voluntarily. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, says she's looking to scale up deportations. Speaking to Nick Ferrari at breakfast last week, she rejected claims the returns agreement with France is failing.
Look, they are still relatively small numbers, but the thing I would say is this was a pilot.
In 2025, 41,472 people cross the English Channel, and you're talking about the low hundreds. This is a disaster.
No, I think it was always a pilot, and it was designed to try to prove that this new model of working with the French could work.
Sir Elton John's expected to give evidence in the High Court later in the privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He joins the likes of Prince Harry and Liz Hurley in bringing legal action against Associated Newspapers Limited. A&L has strongly denied wrongdoing. And France have opened their Rugby Union Six Nations title defence with a 36-14 victory over Ireland in Paris. The hosts scored 5 tries, meaning they collected a bonus point. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,402. It closed up 87 yesterday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, blustery downpours in the south, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Right now, B&Q Club and TradePoint members get 10% off every product in-store and thousands of products online. Not a member? Join today and save today. Sign up in-store or online. Hurry, ends Tuesday. You can do it when you're B&Q it. Exclusions apply. For full terms and conditions, see DIY.com or TradePoint.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after 7 on Friday, February the 6th. He seems to have done it again. He sparked a fresh backlash yesterday. Sir Keir Starmer offering that apology, but claiming he believed Peter Mandelson when he said, quotes, he barely knew, close quotes, Jeffrey Epstein. Just the most basic of Google searches would have sorted that. So what do we make of that story? In other news, to Bradford. Keep it in the family. Growing concern, and indeed the appointment of a nurse specialising in cousin marriages or inter-family marriages in Bradford. Now, this is something that's been raised by Conservative MP Richard Holden. He told LBC last month...
There are really serious health concerns, particularly when first cousin marriage isn't like a one-off in multiple generations, but when it happens generation after generation after generation.
Is it time for the Palace of Westminster to have an away day, or actually some away years? The suggestion is if they don't move out of Westminster, it could take 60 years to repair. Liberal Democrat MP Marie Goldman is one of the MPs responsible for the renewal of the Houses of Parliament. She says she wants to see everyone moved out temporarily so work can proceed.
I want to see us full decamp. That means moving everybody out of the palace and allowing the trades to get on and do the really difficult, intricate work that they need to do.
Planning a getaway soon, possibly an Easter break going into Europe? Well, beware, long airport queues under new EU border control system. We'll have more on that for you later in this hour. Plus, to Alton Towers. Just how much of it is a disability if you have ADHD or anxiety? At Alton Towers, they are removing the so-called disability passes for those conditions. But just how fair is that?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question for you. Why are politicians so bad at saying sorry? Now, while yesterday's wasn't quite as unedifying as...
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so, so sorry.
Former Deputy Prime Minister Sir Nick Clegg back in 2012. It appears, actually, Swatzi Keir Starmer said yesterday to have sparked fresh anger with the suggestion that, again, I will read you exactly what he said, Mandelson barely knew Jeffrey Epstein. Well, of course, Sir Keir Starmer was on defence yesterday over this ongoing scandal and how much he actually knew. He went to Hastings yesterday, talking about pride in place. Remember, we talked about that yesterday, saying he had, quotes, no reason to believe that Mandelson was telling him, quotes, anything but the truth. And then came this apology to the survivors.
To them, I want to say this. I am sorry. Sorry for what was done to you. Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him. And sorry that even now you're forced to watch this story unfold in public once again.
But as ever, and I will say this, I think he's a decent bloke, and I'm sure that apology was heartfelt. I also don't think he's up to the job. And when fielding questions from journalists, he sought again to shift the blame for Mandelson's appointment onto the security services for not carrying out their vetting duties properly.
There was then, I should add, security vetting carried out independently by the security services, which is an intensive exercise that gave him clearance for the role. And you have to go through that before you take up the post. Clearly, both the due diligence and the security vetting need to be looked at again. I've already strengthened the due process. I think we need to look at the security vetting because it now transpires that what was being said was not true. And had I known then what I know now, I'd never have appointed him in the first place.
I just remind you, this is supposedly a forensically skilled barrister, former director of public prosecutions, saying I was lied to. How many times, if you're in the legal profession, how many times have you seen barristers take people apart because they're lying? Are we really meant to buy this? Let's turn first to Pauline, now Baroness Neville-Jones, who was Minister of State for Security and Counterterrorism at the Home Office, also chaired the Joint Intelligence Committee, and joins me now. Baroness, thank you for your time this morning. Well, we know this has gone to the ISC, the International Security Committee. What do you understand to be the normal vetting process when you were serving? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's quite intrusive, and what they look at is not only what's publicly available, which certainly they would produce, but also they would look at his financial record, and they would look at his private transactions as well as his whatever appears in public on the on his ministerial and other salaries that came in. They would look at his behaviour. One of the processes, that the people who do the interviewing, and they are all trained individuals. This is a specialised activity. It isn't just anybody who does this. So there are various routines they go through. And one of them is, what kind of lifestyle did this person lead? Are they suitable? Would they in any way embarrass the government in carrying out their job. You must remember that this was a government appointment. It wasn't a civil service appointment. This was a political choice. It's not then the job of the security services to say yes or no. What they do is to lay out the evidence, and it's for the government then to decide. So I think the Prime Minister can't shelter behind the notion that somehow he got clearance from the security service. What they will have done is to have produced the information that was available. Now, one of the questions clearly is, how deep did that go? But from my experience, they do. This is meant to be intrusive, and it is.
From the criteria you've just kindly listed, you must be staggered, A, when the appointment went ahead, and B, as this crisis or scandal has unfolded, Baroness.
Well, I think it is surprising. I think it's surprising that he did actually pass the test. It's very clear, isn't it, from what the Prime Minister has said, that he did have material to work with, because he appears to have, by his own account, questioned Mandelson. And he must have done it on the basis of something. He tells us that he believed Mandelson. Presumably he believed Mandelson rather than what was in front of him.
Can I put it to you, Baroness, that nicknames such as Scandalson and the Prince of Darkness might be a clue?
Well, I would think so, yes.
What happens next?
That is one of the things that everybody knows.
Yeah.
That there is background to this. There are signals, there were red lights in this appointment.
What will the ISC be seeking to discover?
I think the ISC will get the material. I think what they've undertaken to do is to look at that material. I don't think they've undertaken actually to do more grubbing around. What they will do, I think, is to give some kind of judgment on whether the information they now see was relevant and to the point, and whether it gave the Prime Minister a good basis on which to actually make a valid decision.
Final question, if I can ask you to put your political pundit hat on. How likely is it that he survives this, Baroness?
Well, I think I'll leave that to the House of Commons. I think we've got plenty of people who are going to answer that question.
All right. Grateful for your time and all the background from your previous work as to what the vetting procedure should have been like. And goodness me, that seems to be a fail on every single level, doesn't it? Come to your reaction in a moment, 12 after 7. Let's bring in the conversation Emma Bunnell, who's editor of Labour List, joining me now. And perhaps I could start with the last question I put to my other contributor, Emma. How likely is it the Prime Minister will survive this in your view? Good morning. Emma, can you hear me? I think not. Let's try and get Emma. Let's just recap on where... Oh, let's go to a call. Let's do it that way. Thanks. Paul in Leicester. Paul, thank you for coming on the line. We hear that, in fact, this was really the fault of the security services, and he believed that Mandelson, barely knew Epstein. Your take on that, Paul?
It misdirected it, which is fair enough. That's in his power to do it. Apparently, the other guy is doing a really good job with the previous one. But then you think about scenarios. A light bulb must have gone off in Starmer's head. Oh, I know who can do this. Mm. Someone who's got dodgy passports, mortgage loans, never mind the links with Peter Gilliard. And that would have gone off in his head. I know someone for this. That should have been...
Just to clarify, it's Epstein's links with paedophilia, just so we get that absolutely right.
And then Mandelson's
friendship with the man. Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. But obviously the passport thing, the loan for the mortgage, that should have been enough red flags for him. Even to completely dismiss it in his head.
How much, if any, confidence do you have now in Starmer and his apology and rationale, Paul?
He's gone. His apology was that because he believed the lies. That's it. Forget the Greasy Paul. We don't know them. They've got nothing about them.
All right. Hey, Paul, can I ask you another question?
Yeah.
Are you a Foxes fan?
It could. I obviously spoke to you before, Nick. It could have been worse. Could have been worse, couldn't it?
Well, it could have been 12 points, but by God, they're
in the fight.
10 years ago, they won the bloody Premiership. Now they're trying to be down in League 3.
I know. They'll be back. I think they'll stay up, and they'll draw a line in it, and I think they'll be stronger next season for it.
Let's hope so. Paul, thank you, buddy. We always speak. We have a shared grief there, Leicester City fans, me for more than 50 years. Let's get to Emma. Thanks, Paul. Have a good one. Emma Bunnell, editor of Labour List. Hopefully, we will try again. How likely is it that he will survive? Good morning.
I mean, it really is up to the MPs now, I think. It's not a question of whether, you know, they're having these conversations. They absolutely are. It's if they're having the same conversation, if they can ride on a single path.
Haven't they missed their chance? Because you know better than I, they all quite rightly scatter to the four winds to go to their various constituencies. So the plotting, the talking, the cabal goes. Haven't they missed the opportunity? Or do they come back having met their constituents and meet on Monday and say, my God, I went through a ration of hell on the doorsteps?
I think that the latter is probably what is going to be more likely. I was at a constituency meeting myself last night, and there was sort of lots of discussion about various things, not just this, but sort of, you know, both in terms of positive and negative about where the Labour Party was. But if they're going to be hearing anger, upset, real sense of frustration from their constituents, from their local members on the doorsteps, then they come back every Monday night that Parliament sits. They have a meeting. That meeting might well coalesce feelings, how well that meeting's handled. But the problem is, I don't think it will coalesce it. Let's say that Carl gets through. We've then got the by-election at the end of the month.
Yes. I think we have got problems with your line. I will end it there. Emma, sorry, I know you're bad, but thank you, because we're missing every sort of fifth word. Emma Burnell, thank you. Your editor of Labour List, talking about the anger within the constituency meeting. Again, this apology, he accepted that Starmer accepted that he, Mandelson, barely knew Epstein. Are you really buying that? And not just anger in the political spectre either.
King Charles was accosted by a heckler over his brother and the Epstein scandal during a visit to Colchester. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the full report.
And that'll be after the 7:16 LBC News headlines here, read by Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister remains under intense pressure from some Labour backbenchers over the Peter Mandelson scandal. Talks between the United States and Iran are due to take place in Oman later as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear programme. And Sir Elton John's expected to give evidence in the High Court later in the privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, blustery, sometimes thundery downpours in the south. Later, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the A1M southbound from Junction 6 at Welwyn to Junction 4 at the A414. And that's because of an accident. On the M25, two lanes are closed on the Hertfordshire stretch clockwise at Junction 24 at Porter's Bar. It's following an accident and there are delays from Junction 23 at South Mimms. Then just off the M25 at Junction 25, heading south towards Enfield, the road is currently closed between Turkey Street and Hoe Lane. And that's after an accident, and that's causing delays. In central London, Oxford Street's closed both ways between Tottenham Court Road Station and Soho Street. It's because of an ongoing investigation, so definitely do expect delays.
This is LBC. Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £25 million.
That's enough to get your hands in the air. Woo! Wow, you really don't care.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over. Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
On your marks. Get set. Go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph than a Friday feeling. And smoother than your last online date. More confidence. More go. In a new hybrid engine. With 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Go on. Visit your local Toyota centre. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
squealed me a mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
About 19 minutes after 7, more of your calls coming in. Amanda will come to you in just a moment. Let me quickly tell you just some of the headlines. I won't go through all of them. And it is, I think, every single newspaper but about one goes with various aspects of this unfolding Starmer Mandelson saga. For the Sun newspaper, anger at PM's sorry excuse. The Financial Times, Starmer apologies to Epstein victims as crisis deepens. So they have the same interpretation. The other aspect, of course, is the possibility of a challenge by Angela Rayner. And that's the front page of the Daily Mail. Rayner, I'm ready to go. Reportedly lining up allies and taking them to a chicken and chips dinner in Notting Hill, getting her team ready. But the Daily Telegraph reminds us, Rayner tilt at number 10 hit by tax inquiry. Remember, I think it was a £40,000 from memory of tax that should have been paid. Yes, it is £40,000 into that stamp duty row or scandal or fiasco, whatever word you want to use. She's going to have to be come through that and effectively be cleared, really, before she can have a go for it. Front page with the LBC app, keeping you up to date with all of that. Starmer battles for future after apology. And let's get into that now. Amanda is in Croydon. Amanda, you're on the radio. That apology, is it enough?
Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
I wanted to give a comparable example.
Oh, please, yes.
Your people. So if I was employing a teacher and I read their CV that they'd been fired twice from two different roles within the sector,
yeah.
And then instead of doing a DBS to check their clearance to work with children,
right.
I just asked them the question and then they lied to me, would that be adequate?
Well, I sense you're in the education profession.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I'm going to say no, but I want to hear your rationale because I've never been in the education profession, so what would actually happen?
And also, sorry, to add to that, when you're having the interview with them, you know that they continued a friendship with a known paedophile.
A convicted paedophile, yeah. Sorry, DBS is Disclosure and Barring Service, as I recall,
yes.
Just from...
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to answer as someone who's never been involved in education. No, I would have thought there's absolutely no way he, she would cross the threshold. What is the reality of someone who hires and has hired teachers?
Absolutely not, because they're... due diligence and Keir Starmer being the chief of the Crown Prosecution Service or whatever the role was called will know about due diligence. He's an orator, he's a barrister, he's allegedly a professional. You should be cynical as a barrister. You know, you should be scrutinising everything and challenging and questioning. And the fact that Peter Mandelson had been fired twice from a public sector, high profile roles, was known that he was still friends with a paedophile. Red flags all the way.
Well, the Prime Minister, just to remind you, of course, just sorry to talk over you, the Prime Minister says that he Mandelson said he barely knew Epstein and he, the Prime Minister, believed him. It's risible to me, absolutely.
Really,
risible.
Really, ex Reigate Grammar barrister doesn't know. No. And if he didn't know, I'm sorry, he's too naive to be Prime Minister.
That's really summed it up. Amanda, thank you. Have a good day if you are off to a school or place of education. Guy in Cleethorpes. Guy, this apology, I don't think it's really helped matters, and seeking to blame others is even worse. Guy, your take on it. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Yeah, an absolutely pitiful apology. And he kept pulling in everybody else but himself. And I agree with most of the calls that are coming in. I mean, he's supposed to be a forensic solicitor, and
highly skilled, actually. He's a barrister, so he's, you know, further up the legal totem pole than a solicitor guy.
Oh no, it's just beyond belief. And the other red flag, as we're talking red flags, is when he announced in Parliament that there would be, you know, a release of documents, he put this caveat in about international relationships.
Yes.
So that's not even about Homeland Security. So he he knows there's stuff in there that is really not going to paint a good picture, because he's effectively tried to buy the release of that.
Lastly, Guy, to use a modern idiom, is he toast?
Oh, absolutely.
How long's he got?
It's interesting. I mean, he's not going to be there beyond May. I still think Rayner can cook. I mean, somebody's got to do a better job than this, because, to be honest, Boris has Boris has buried politics. He's just put the headstone on it in terms of trust.
Lastly, there's a suggestion in a newspaper column today in the Times by Martin Samuel. He's likened it to a football coach. And he makes the point that if the team was actually winning, then possibly you could get away with this. But if you look at the state of the country, unemployment 11-year high, various other issues, and if the economy was powering on, he could probably fight his way out. But it's just like a sort of gloomy full stop, isn't it, on his premiership?
Well, I mean, we've had, I don't know, I forget the count now, it must be 14, 15 U-turns. I'm not, yeah. Outside of, you know, what appears to be improving in the health service, I can't think of anything else. I mean, you see, every day I get a headline about, a significant business closing.
Guy, look after yourself. Thank you. Have a good weekend. Let's come to another story, an Associated story. And the King was on a royal visit yesterday, but it didn't go the way that he and his courtiers would have intended. LBC Shivani Sharma reports on that. She was in Dedham in Essex for that visit. Joins me now. Shivani, good morning.
Nick, good morning. He may have been the Queen's favourite, but he's now become the Andrew problem that King Charles just can't seem to shake, even in a village packed with royalists like Dedham in Colchester, where the monarch was visiting local charities and a school choir yesterday. Because before he even arrived, photographs of Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor kneeling on all fours over an unknown woman, those photographs which were revealed in the Epstein files, were scattered across the high street in Dedham. Now, we understand that they were swiftly picked up and thrown away by locals, most of whom, as I say, seemed to be royalists. But a short while later, during the King's walk around, he was accosted by a heckler in his 70s, quizzing him over his brother and the Epstein scandal.
Charles! Charles! Have you pressurised the police? It's not investigating Andrew.
Thank you for coming.
If you don't think these people need justice,
that's not how it is,
but it is. Because this is the only way to make it clear that Andrew not be let off.
Now, that heckler was quickly escorted away by the police. As you'd expect, the King was surrounded by officers and royal protection, which somewhat sheltered him from the situation. But you can hear the heckler telling officers afterwards that Andrew can't be let off and that this is the only way to fight for justice for the victims. Of course, Andrew denies all wrongdoing, but you won't be surprised to hear the King didn't respond to that heckling, Nick. He carried on with his walk around, although worth noting a statement from the royals back in October said that their thoughts are with the victims of Jeffrey Epstein, a sentiment we know was echoed by Prince Edward this week also. But I have to say, despite that scandal engulfing Andrew and the royals by association, a lot of the locals I spoke to yesterday didn't seem to be put off. They were determined to brave it in the rain and the cold to line up for hours to pay their respects to the King.
It's an event. We've got
yes.
to be here.
No, I'm very much a royalist, so yeah, I'd be here. Whatever, if I had to come by boat, which I think will be close. I did see them a long time ago when my husband was alive at Lavenham. He came to the Guildhall there to open it, and we were very close, so it was wonderful. Yeah.
It's a great honour for them to come down here and to see the community groups that they want to see, so brilliant. And a lot of people have turned out, so thanks for everyone for coming along today.
I have just shaken hands with His Majesty. This glove is never going to be washed again.
Now, as you can hear there, Nick, plenty of support still for the King yesterday, but the Andrew scandal, the Epstein scandal, is not something that he's able to fully escape from.
Shivani Sharma reporting for LBC 728. Let's feature some of the social media that's coming in on our conversation about both the apology and the suggestion that Sir Keir Starmer yesterday sought to deflect the blame effectively to the vetting process. Mike says, so no one in the Labour Party thought it might be an idea to alert PM to Mandelson's history? Am I the only one who finds this truly staggering? Elizabeth in North London says, I think Starmer is sorry, but he's sorry he's been found out. Sorry, but he is absolutely useless. I'll give her that one. And lastly, this comes in from Jatin. Mandelson has had to resign twice from the Labour Party. It's a really, really stupid decision for Keir to give him another chance. He had the final decision. He, Keir, has to go. Gary, you'll be the next caller on that. I hope you can other hug to the other side of the news when we can give you a good run at it. Also, coming up later in the show, is it an away day or away years for the Palace of Westminster? If they don't move out, it will take decades to repair and even more billions of pounds. Here's an advert on social media by UK Parliament yesterday featuring Labour MP Judith Cummings with this explanation.
We need to install temporary electrics, water, heating and other services so this mass of outdated pipes and wires can be decommissioned.
Plus, I'll see you in court. You'll still certainly be standing when you go to the High Court later today to give your evidence in that trial involving the Daily Mail. We'll have more on that later in the show as well. 7:30, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister remains under intense pressure from his own MPs over the Peter Mandelson scandal. Sir Keir Starmer has admitted he knew of Lord Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, but says he repeatedly lied about the extent of it. The United States and Iran are due to start talks in Oman later as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear program. President Trump has repeatedly threatened military action if no diplomatic solutions found. And the government says nearly 60,000 illegal migrants and convicted criminals have been deported since the 2024 election. The Home Office says 15,000 people were removed while 43,000 others left voluntarily. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north. Some blustery and thundery downpours in the south later. A high of 12 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The Prime Minister appointed a man to one of the most senior roles in the British diplomatic hierarchy, a man that he knew had been in an ongoing relationship with a paedophile financier. Starmer is right to be angry, but why on earth would the Prime Minister choose to appoint this man knowing what he knew at the time? I find that really quite astounding.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
The all-electric Ford e-Transit Custom, loaded with doing power. And now, you could win one. Take a test drive in any Transit Custom to enter and be in with a chance of winning a Ford e-Transit Custom. Search Win a Ford e-Transit Custom and book online. To enter, take a test drive between the 1st of January and the 28th of February. Ready, set, Ford. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Daddy? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young can be found in the new Seat Ibiza and new Arona. Both have smart new looks and stylish new interiors. Plus, new alloy wheels and a 6-speaker sound system. Seat. Rolling Young.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, back to our conversation about that apology from Sir Keir Starmer and suggestion that he believed Peter Mandelson, who, I remind you, nicknames of Scandalson and the Prince of Darkness, might have been a clue for a barrister, you would have thought. But this Epstein story, it's almost like a royal flush, isn't it? It covers every air. We've mentioned how royalty, we know politics. And it's even yesterday got into the world of finance, because as the governor of the Bank of England announced the decision as regards interest rates, he also referenced some of the allegations and some of the ensuing scandal. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, picks up on that now. Christian, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, one of the headlines from the Bank of England yesterday was, of course, that decision to maintain interest rates at their 3.75%. And also in the detail, we learned that the bank is very worried about increasing unemployment rates. And indeed, they have downgraded the UK's growth forecast for this year to just 0.9%. But putting all that to one side, it is also worth noting that, as you mentioned, the governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, was asked about some of the market sensitivity questions around the allegations concerning what Peter Mandelson did when he was in government. And it was quite an emotional moment for Andrew Bailey. His voice actually cracked a bit when he said, and I quote now, "To see those pictures of Peter Mandelson with Alistair Darling," he's referring to pictures of these government ministers in the bunker at the height of financial crises. He said, "To see those pictures where Alistair Darling was doing all the right things, and he was doing them with a thorough sense of honesty and decency, and he can't speak for himself today." He said, "How on earth could this have happened?" And indeed, he's angry and quite moved, I think, by the sense of betrayal. Andrew Bailey worked very closely with Alistair Darling. At the time of the financial crisis, he was what's known as the Bank of England's chief cashier, which doesn't mean he was sitting behind a till.
It means he was in charge. What does this actually mean, Christian?
It means he was in charge of banknotes. He was in charge of the physical money. And indeed, he went on to run the Financial Conduct Authority, which has had to deal with various other parts of the fallout from the Epstein files, including the investigation and finding of the former Barclays chief exec, Jez Staley, who's up to his neck in the Epstein files. And, you know, Nick, I've got to tell you, I was at a big city dinner last night, surrounded by top bankers and lawyers and regulators, and it was the only topic of conversation. I was sitting next to a distinguished veteran of the city, and he and I were looking through these wretched Epstein emails together on his phone. Please say he wasn't in them, by the way.
Right.
But it was the only topic of conversation, of course, because people are just absolutely gripped by the macabre, yes, but also the drama and the possible questions as to what more are we going to get.
Again, in a related story, what's it doing for the pound?
Well, it is having a significant impact on UK politics, if I can put it as mildly as that. And whenever there's uncertainty in Westminster, it will inevitably feed through into some elements of our financial system. So the speculation over whether Keir Starmer is toast and the associated speculation as to who or what might follow him has rattled some investors, not least when it comes to the currency markets and, of course, particularly our old friends in the bond markets. And if you look at the movements of things like our 10-year gilt, investors now pricing in what it might cost to lend to a government that could be to the left of Keir Starmer, that might have more inclination to turn on the spending taps, to borrow more. If there was a change in the Prime Minister, would that move the government to the left? Bond traders are now weighing this up. They thought that political uncertainty in this regard would come perhaps in the early summer or late spring. They're now pricing it in to come much sooner than that. So there is a correlation, of course, between political uncertainty in Westminster and uncertainty in parts of our financial system.
And for our last conversation of the week, let's cross the Atlantic. What's happening on Wall Street?
Well, it's been a serious rout in US tech stocks. We talked, didn't we, earlier in the week, Nick, about the impact that some new AI products and services have had on listed UK tech companies, data companies. We've seen now a very similar impact on Wall Street with equivalent companies listed over in the States plunging. And one of the elements of that now is that Bitcoin, which I would remind you, if I'd taken you out for a beer in October last year and talked you into buying a Bitcoin, it would have been $126,000. And I would have said, trust me. Well, actually, I wouldn't have been so reckless. But you might have been talked into buying one at that.
Come on.
You would find it's now at $64,000.
Wow.
There has been absolute carnage. Why is that? Well, Bitcoin is being treated like a tech stock in its own right, but it is also rightly deemed to be a very risk-on asset, very risky asset. And in an environment where people are increasingly nervous and moving to safer bets, Bitcoin is losing out. And a lot of people would have lost a lot of money.
Enjoy your weekend. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Thanks for taking us through those headlines. 7:39, Gary, coming to you in just a moment. This is what you're saying on social media about that apology from Sir Keir Starmer yesterday. Jenny in Horsham, Keir Starmer was so pathetic, I almost felt sorry for him. It wasn't an apology, it was a buck-passing speech. Using the word sorry several times does not amount to an apology. Sarah says, how on earth are we supposed to believe that Mandelson didn't know Epstein very well? He's in one of his bedrooms in Paris in his underpants and he's with semi-naked women being massaged. And a good point here from Dan in Kent, who simply asks, are the same security services the ones who are saying the Chinese super embassy can go ahead? That's a bit chilling, isn't it? Gary's in Broxbourne. Thanks for holding, Gary. The point you want to make. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I was watching the news last night of my mother-in-law. She's 85. I think she sums it up.
Who's this? Your mother-in-law, did you say? Sorry.
Yeah, my mother-in-law.
Yeah. What did 85-year-old Mar-in-law say?
She said, well, if I knew he was a wrong'un, why didn't the people in the Labour Party know, and they know a lot more than I know?
Could your mother-in-law take over the vetting committee?
she vetted me and I was all right.
Did she approve of you the first time you took her daughter home?
I think so, yeah. Because I made a second time, so I must have done.
she's quite a ferocious character, is she, mother-in-law?
She's got plenty to say, yeah.
Lastly, mother-in-law could see it. I think I could probably could see it, you could see it. What the hell happened to Sakir, Gary?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the man's... He's jumped twice, hasn't he, Mandelson? He's jumped twice before he was
jumped
pushed.
Been pushed, yeah.
Also, Nick, I'm wondering if they'll brush this under the carpet and make him go away quietly, because what does he have, what does Mandelson have on previous Labour bigwigs? Tony Blair's been quiet. He ain't said a word about this, has he?
Tony Blair's not spoken, nor has Alistair Campbell. We've certainly sought comment from the latter. I'm not sure, probably we've sought comment from the former as well. Here's the other thing. If Mandelson is moving in the kind of area where you seem to have photographs taken of just about everything, apart from when you're in the bathroom, using it for toiletry reasons, if Mandelson got that idea, imagine some of the photographs that he might have.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. What has he got on the other bigwigs?
One day we might find out. Best wishes to mother-in-law, Gary. Thanks for hanging on the line. 7:41. More calls on that to come. Now, let's go to other matters. And as I said when we started the show, there are warnings of queues at passport control, at airports in Europe over upcoming holiday periods. So Easter, not quite round the corner, but it's not that far. This is all to do to the rollout of a new biometric border system. But how is it working, and what might be the hurdles to clear? Let's bring into the conversation Julia Lowe Bosaid, who's CEO at Advantage Travel Partnership, a network of travel agents, joins us now. OK, let's back up, or let's say begin at the very beginning. Julia, what is it that they're trying to, or that they have put in place? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. This is a new European entry-exit system whereby British travellers or anyone that needs a visa or passport to enter the EU will have to undertake biometric facial recognition and fingerprints at one of the special kiosks they've now implemented at these airports to get them through the European border control. It's all to do with border security. Principle, fantastic idea, absolutely makes sense. Operationally, as we've seen, it has proved quite challenging for some destinations.
Why? What's not working that should be working?
It's the pinch points that you're getting when multiple flights are arriving at key destinations at the same time, where we still have to, as British passport holders, we still have to undertake the biometrics, scan our passports, do the fingerprints, which add on minutes, but we're still having to queue to get our passport stamped. So the knock-on impact of that just means in some destinations, we've seen it in Lisbon, we've seen it in Geneva, they've actually switched those machines off because the bottleneck is just too much. Our concern really is, as you say there, we're coming up to really key times, half term looming, Easter not far around the corner. The likelihood of queues is going to be a real worry for some passengers.
So at Advantage Travel Partnership, what are your colleagues telling your clients over this?
Yeah, our members are telling clients that just be prepared that you may have to queue. So if you're arriving at a peak, travelling at a peak time, make sure you're prepared. Make sure that if you've got young kids, you've got things to entertain them. Some people will travel through seamlessly. They won't be any queues. But just be prepared that this might happen and, expect the worst and hopefully the best.
Question lastly, Julia. Sorry, once you've done it for the first time, that's it, is it? You're good to go every time you then go back through Europe, or you're going to have this every time you present yourself?
We're going to have the queues every time because at the minute there are still those pinch points. Eventually, we'll all be registered. We'll be able to seamlessly travel through. The ambition is actually we won't even need passports because facial recognition will mean that we can go through quite seamlessly. And we still will have to do the passport stamping. So that is another queue. Once that all goes, then it will be a much better experience. But it's a big ambition. I think it will eventually get there, but it's going to take some years before we can travel quite seamlessly. But I say that the queues aren't every airport all the time. They really are at peak times where you have multiple flights arriving at the same destination.
Grateful for your input. Thank you. Julia Lobo Saeed, the CEO of Advantage Travel Partnership, 744. Let's take a call from Sean in Long Melford, who's been hanging on the line. That apology, was it enough? Where does it move the story on to? Good morning.
Yeah, morning. I messaged in this morning and finally someone rang me back, actually.
Okay, but, you get a lot, so I apologize. It took some time, but go ahead,
that's great.
Yep.
Yeah, well, my point was that basically Starmer has got to go. He's made a mockery of the institution of our government, but more to the point was that how on earth can anyone be considering Angela Rayner to come back in as replacement as PM when she had to step down from the cabinet?
She seems to have the support of the party. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a Labour MP, but she seems to have the support of the party. That's the key, Sean.
She may well have. But, I mean, again, what does that do from credibility point of view in terms of the government institution? I mean, isn't that just making the same mistake twice in terms of appointing somebody that's obviously had to step down from their position already?
I mean, it's pretty unedifying, isn't it? If this one has to go because basically he's incompetent and is taken over by someone who doesn't know how to pay their stamp duty.
Well, this is it. I mean, what message does that send out to the country and to any other observers out there?
Not a good one, Sean. I have to. And thank you for hanging on the line. I'm going to the news. Also, what message does this send out? That NHS needs to recruit a nurse specialising in what's called cousin marriage for Bradford over obvious concerns. Conservative MP Richard Holden told LBC about this last month.
There are really serious health concerns, particularly when first cousin marriage, it isn't like a one-off in multiple generations, but when it happens generation after generation after generation.
It's certainly not a one-off, Mr. Holden. In three inner-city Bradford wards, almost half of mothers from the Pakistani community were married to a first or second cousin, 46%. Doesn't seem right. What is that tradition? How is it to be addressed? We'll look at that later in the show. 7:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer remains under intense pressure this morning from within Labour ranks as he looks to move on from the Lord Mandelson saga. The United States and Iran are due to hold their first direct talks in 8 months as Washington seeks to curb Tehran's nuclear programme. And a review of the cholesterol-lowering drug statins suggests that they're far safer than previously thought. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, blustery, sometimes thundery downpours in the south. Later, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise from before Junction 23 at South Mimms to 24 at Potter's Bar. It's following an accident where two lanes are closed. Also, long delays on the A1M southbound to Junction 4 at the A414. It's after an accident. All the lanes have just reopened, but it's still very slow from Junction 6 at Welwyn. Also, delays on the M4 eastbound to Junction 4 at Heathrow. It's because of an accident. There are delays back to the M25 junction. The A10 remains closed southbound in Enfield, just south of the M25 at Turkey Street. And the A13 is partially blocked eastbound at Basildon at the Five Bells interchange. And that's also causing delays.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
At Tesco Mobile, club card prices are frozen, so your contract price stays on ice. Get the iPhone 17 with 12 gigs of data and an iPad, all for just £45.99 a month for 36 months with club card prices, saving you £126. And it stays like that for the length of your contract. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 22nd of March. Club card and 36-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access.
We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
You know that feeling when your money is working for you? No? Well, make it. Open an investment account at XTB, make your first deposit and receive a free Rolls-Royce stock.
Rolls-Royce?
That's right. Own one of the best performing UK stocks this year for free. And if you like it, you can easily buy more stocks and ETFs with 0% commission. Join XTB and let your money work for you.
Your capital is at risk. Investments above €100,000 are charged at 0.2% commission. FX fees may apply. Limited availability. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:50 now. Among a slew of gloomy headlines for the government, this one might change the mood a little. Home Office claiming deportations at a 10-year high. Nearly 60,000 unauthorised migrants and convicted criminals have been removed from or deported from the United Kingdom since the election. Figures from the Home Office. Let's get more on this now then from Labour MP, Minister for Migration and Citizenship, Mike Tapp, who joins me now. Minister, thank you for coming on. Give us a bit more of a breakdown on this. Which countries are they going back to? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Deportations and removals. We must remember that. When I say deportations, I get told off explicitly.
My apologies. Okay, let's start it. Deportations and removals reaches a 10-year high. Minister, absolutely. Thanks for joining us. Good morning. Which are the countries to which they're going back?
Thank you, Nick. I've always got your back. But, what's really important here, we made promises to the public that we'd restore order and control. This is the highest in a decade. It's up by around 30% on the previous government. And what we've said to people is, if you're here illegally, we will work hard to remove people. And we'll ramp it up. We'll continue doing that. When countries aren't taking people back, we will threaten visa impositions, which basically means we'll stop their visas for coming here. That's already working, by the way, with three countries which are opening up for returns again. We'll continue doing this. If people aren't playing by the rules and taking their people back, then we will be really harsh and punish them. So there is a long way to go, but we'll continue at this pace. In fact, we'll ramp it up.
And which are the countries? You didn't give us an idea of where they're going back to, Minister.
There's a number of different countries. So Albania is a big one, Vietnam, numerous African nations as well. There are nations that are difficult to return to as well. So we are working hard at that. For example, Syria, where there are some areas around Damascus, for example, that are safe. So, of course, we've got to do the right thing because we're decent. That's British values. But at the same time, we need to restore order and control, and we're working hard to do that.
And this, of course, is in tandem with the one-in, one-out scheme. What are the latest figures for that, Minister?
This is 281 removed and 350 in. Now, the reason there's that slight discrepancy is one of the outgoing flights to France was delayed due to operational reasons on the French side, but of course we'll continue to ramp this up as much as we possibly can. There's difficult technical, operational and legal issues, but it's a pilot scheme. We've always been really clear with that and we'll continue working hard at it.
It's a pilot scheme? How much longer is it going to be a pilot scheme, Minister?
I understand what you're saying. You can only say pilot for a period of time.
Well, you've been saying it since August.
It was since I became a minister, but we are working hard at this. I guarantee you that. And it does seed that
When will we be
doubt.
Able to drop the word pilot from these conversations, Mr. Tapp?
Perhaps I won't use it next time I speak to you, Nick, but look... We are working hard on this, but what we've got to remember is...
Well, what moves it from a pilot to a reality? What's the number that you and your colleagues say, right, this is now tried and trusted, we don't need you as the buyer, this, next time Nick Ferrari asks that question, tell him it's a reality. What needs to happen?
There isn't a hard and fast rule for when you drop that word. What we've got to bear in mind here is that we've had the highest deportations and removals in a decade. That's nearly 60,000 now. And by the way, over nearly 9,000 of those are foreign national offenders. That's up over 30% as well. So none of this is, you know, the final fix, but we're working hard across the board to secure the borders and restore order and control.
I must say the government is also delivering on its pledge to end the use of hotels to house these individuals, but of course in some instances they're going to other military camps. How many people are currently being housed down at Crowborough?
That's a good question. Last I heard, it was around 50, but excuse me if that's increased now.
Okay.
I might be slightly wrong that, but last I heard was around 50. We're working hard to reduce the use of hotels and move people into
There are local reports that some of the people at Crowborough have simply checked out and come back into London. Are you aware of that?
That's not something I've heard, but what I do know is that there are strict security procedures around signing in and signing out. So I'll look into that. That wouldn't be acceptable, of course.
Okay.
We have to ensure that people are where we put them so that we can then either deport and remove them or, of course, ensure they've got asylum support if they're granted that status.
All right. There's a couple of other conversations that I'm sure you're anticipating. Minister, when do you think we might see the first non-sensitive files in relation to Lord Mandelson's vetting to be the US ambassador?
Firstly, Nick, can I just lay out that this is a very sensitive issue. It's extremely sad for the victims, and I'm pleased to see that the Prime Minister has apologised to the victims for believing the lies of Peter Mandelson. Having myself arrested paedophiles in the past, but also had to search the room of a little girl who was a victim of grooming, looking for evidence of grooming. So this really
horrific.
Does stick with me, and I know it does many, many people. It's important that we're transparent. I think a sign of good government and good leadership is not necessarily the mistakes you make, but it's owning them and it's acting on them. And this transparency and releasing all the documents will ensure... and mean that we do never make these mistakes again. On your specific question...
How on earth can you suggest Keir Starmer owns it, Minister? He said he, quotes, barely knew Jeffrey Epstein. He just needed to do a Google search. He must have known the nickname Scandalson and the Prince of Darkness. And this is a trained barrister. Give me a break.
It's public knowledge, isn't it, that Mandelson had that relationship with Epstein at the time of...
Well, it wasn't for Keir Starmer. He believed him when, quotes, he barely knew Epstein.
How gullible is your Prime Minister? He knew him, I don't know, but what I do know is that
I had a bridge to sell, Sir Keir Starmer.
The relationship between Epstein and Mandelson was put to Mandelson during vetting. He lied, he weaseled, he tricked.
But Mr. Tapp, the Prime Minister is a barrister. He will have been in court and been lied. His skills, presumably as a barrister and a DPP, are to see through that, Mr. Tapp.
The Prime Minister wasn't the one conducting the vetting. He wasn't the vetting officer. And by the way, I just want to make it clear that I'm not blaming the vetting procedure or officer. But what we need to do is, at the time that all of this is released, which won't be too long, I hope, we can go through all of these mistakes and then we can rectify them so it never happens again.
So when might we see the first file?
On your specific question,
yes.
To be completely honest with you, I don't know exactly when, but it will be in the next few weeks and months, of course. It will all go through the Intelligence and Security Committee, which is a trusted committee within Parliament, fully vetted, and this transparency is really important. I'm pleased to see it.
All right. One of your colleagues, the Labour MP for Liverpool Riverside, Kim Johnson, put on social media yesterday that McSweeney, as in Morgan McSweeney, Chief of Staff, McSweeney's operation is rotten to the core. If this is their idea of leadership, Number 10 needs gutting from top to bottom. Do you agree?
Well, like I said, for me, leadership and government is about owning mistakes and acting on them. And Keir Starmer has come out and he's apologised to the victims for this appointment. It should never have happened.
Yeah, but we're talking about Mr. McSweeney now.
McSweeney is a part of the operation, of course. And the transparency going forward will ensure that this absolutely never happens again, because we absolutely deserve better. But look, some of my colleagues have always said this sort of thing about the current leadership. But I am firm in saying that Keir Starmer is working hard to turn the country around from an extremely difficult position that we've inherited. And I'm confident that over time, people will start to feel the positive effects of what we're doing in government.
Right, but is Mr. McSweeney part of that team? Do you still have full confidence in him? Should he stay in post?
Well, look, the appointment of the team around Keir Starmer is for him, but my personal opinion on Morgan McSweeney is that he's always been very effective. He's helped turn the Labour Party around. He's helped get us elected. Of course, I'm not in Number 10, so I don't see day-to-day goings on and operations. But of course, I have confidence in him, but that's not really relevant.
What do you make of these swirling rumours that Angela Rayner is preparing to have a go to lead the party in BPM? Would you be supportive?
I'm supportive in Keir Starmer because I have to say, Nick, I don't come from politics. I'm relatively new to it, and actually, I'm just here to serve and deliver, and that's what we should be focusing on. I know Keir Starmer is because he's similar. He has been in politics longer than me, but he doesn't come from politics either. Mm. It is about serving the country and delivery. That's what I stand for. That's what Keir Starmer stands for, and I know that's what my colleagues stand for too, because I've spoken to them.
Lastly, you and your colleagues, you're all in the Palace of Westminster. It's being reported that it could cost up to £39.2 billion and take 61 years for the necessary rebuild and repairs. Is that money well spent?
Well, it's a historic building, isn't it? It's lovely and it's...
Well, bits of it aren't lovely that I see, but maybe you see the lovely bits. It looks a little old and tired when I go.
It's a very impressive building. And whenever I walk in there through the lobby, I do feel a real sense of pride because of the history and the people right. that have walked through there. So I do want to see it repaired. I need to see exactly how that spending is going to be laid out over what period. And, of course, we need to do the right thing for the public purse as well.
All right. Thank you for your time. Nearly 60,000 unauthorised migrants and convicted criminals deported, as outlined by Mike Tapp, Migration and Citizenship Minister. Thank you, Mr. Tapp. Appearing here on LBC, taking us to 8 o'clock and the latest headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock. The Prime Minister remains under intense pressure this morning from his own MPs over the Peter Mandelson scandal. Sir Keir Starmer's admitted that he knew of Lord Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, but says he repeatedly lied about the extent of it. Sir Keir has been forced to hand over files on his appointment as US ambassador after a major backbench backlash. Speaking to Nick, the government minister Mike Tapp rejected calls that the Prime Minister needs to sack his top advisor, Morgan McSweeney.
For me, leadership and government is about owning mistakes and acting on them. And Keir Starmer has come out and he's apologised to the victims for this appointment. It should never have happened.
Yeah, but we're talking about Mr. McSweeney now.
McSweeney's a part of the operation, of course. And the transparency going forward will ensure that this absolutely never happens again because we absolutely deserve better.
Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. The former Tory security minister, Baroness Neville Jones, has told Nick that she's surprised Mr. Mandelson got the job in the first place.
It's very clear, isn't it, from what the Prime Minister has said, that he did have material to work with because he appears to have, by his own account, questioned Mandelson, and he must have done it on the basis of something. I mean, he tells us that he believed Mandelson, presumably he believed Mandelson rather than what was in front of him. And that is one of the things that everybody knows, that there is background to this. There are signals, there were red lights.
Officials from the United States and Iran are due to hold their first direct talks later in 8 months. Washington wants Tehran to pause its nuclear program. President Trump has repeatedly threatened military action if there's no diplomatic solution. Iran says that it is willing to discuss the nuclear issue, but not additional demands. The government says nearly 60,000 illegal migrants and criminals have been deported since the general election in 2024. Figures show 15,000 were removed while 43,000 others left voluntarily. Sir Elton John's expected to give evidence later in the privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He joins the likes of Prince Harry and Liz Hurley in bringing legal action against Associated Newspapers Limited. A&L has strongly denied wrongdoing. And a review of the drug statins suggests that they're far safer than previously thought. A study by Oxford University found no increased risk of listed side effects such as memory loss and depression. Around 8 million people in the UK are thought to take the drugs to lower cholesterol, cutting the chance of heart attack or strokes. In the city, the FTSE 100's just reopened at 10,402. It closed up 87 yesterday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, some blustery downpours in the south later, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, anywhere you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after eight on Friday, February the 6th. The Houses of Parliament are rotten to the core. No, nothing to do with the inhabitants. Literally, the building. There have been reports of fires, what are called asbestos incidents, and even stonemasonry crumbling. But the cost of putting it right could get to around £40 billion and take 61 years. How did they come up with that estimate? Oh, that'll be 61 years. We'll look at that in more detail. In other news, to the NHS, who are now recruiting a specific nurse specialising in cousin marriages in Bradford. In three wards in the city, almost half of mothers from the Pakistani community are married to cousins. Well, I take you back to December 2024, this controversial speech in Parliament by independent MP Iqbal Mohammed defending this practice.
The reason the practice is so common is that ordinary people see family intermarriage overall as something that is very positive.
I'm sorry, I can't even imagine marrying my cousin. Could you? And why is there that practice among our Pakistani friends? To Alton Towers, how much of a disability is ADHD and anxiety? Well, they're going to remove what are called the disability passes for those people, but are they taking their guests for a ride? And in arguably one of the most intriguing stories I have ever covered in getting on for 50 years in this business. The idea is the Winter Olympics start that if it comes down to a matter of inches on the ski jump, well, the men can help themselves by injecting acid into their penis. But how does it work? There's only one way to find out. LBC's Henry Wright. No, not really. We'll be speaking to an expert later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Although the idea of having Henry Ryder is desperately appealing, but probably an illegal employment practice. So let's go to other matters. And you have builders round lately, do some work, I don't know, maybe move into the loft. Let's face it, you probably can't afford to move house, so should we see if we can get in the loft, put one of the kids up in the loft, or maybe do, I don't know, a little bit of painting, putting in a new kitchen? And when the estimate comes, do they say, well, yeah, it's going to cost £15,000 and it's take, I'll need 3 to 4 weeks. Well, how do the estimates come out here? Rebuild the Houses of Parliament? Yep, that's £39.2 billion and it'll take 61 years. Sorry? Yeah, 61 years. How do you get to that? Look, it does need a rebuild. As you could probably work out, I'm fortunate enough to go there on occasions. It looks absolutely glorious from the outside. It is undoubtedly a tourist attraction. It's a fantastic building, but without wishing to be too crude about it, it's damn shabby in places inside. Now, in a video posted on social media by UK Parliament, Labour MP Judith Cummins, who co-chairs the Parliament Restoration and Renewal Board, overseeing the revamping of Parliament, had this explanation.
This building is the home of our democracy, and it's part of the UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it needs to be preserved for future generations. This 500-year-old courtyard, built for Henry VIII, needs work. Restoring the stonework across Parliament will be a priority. If you look here, you can see some of the hundreds of miles of overlapping wires and pipes. The services and technology have deteriorated over time and are increasingly in need of repair or replacement. Some are more than 75 years old. Like this, The steam heating system was installed in the 1950s.
When I heard about this yesterday and decided that we would feature this story, I said there's only one person to whom we must turn. One of the most experienced parliamentarians of all time, and now a broadcaster, former leader of the House of Commons and Conservative, Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, joins me now. Sir Jacob, good to have you on. First question, how have we got to this shocking state of disrepair? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me on. There's been some lack of maintenance, and it's an old building, and with old buildings, things need doing, but lots has already been done. So the roof has been completely restored. The Elizabeth Tower has been completely restored. The speaker's apartments have been completely restored. What they show you in the video is, to my mind, propaganda for a madly expensive scheme. So the courtyard that has crumbling stonework, yes, indeed it does. But that's simply because of a refusal to get on with it, because they've been waiting for the big scheme. Actually, that could have been done 5 years ago without any difficulty.
Are you, Sir Jacob, able to give us what you think then is a more realistic time scale and indeed level of expenditure?
Well, I think this level of expenditure is mad. I think the scheme is over elaborate, tries to do far too much, isn't about mending things, it's about providing a different parliament. And I'll give an example. The Speaker had to move out of the Speaker's house when he was succeeded John Bercow. Yeah. There was a proposal under restoration and renewal for a temporary Speaker's house costing £20 million. The Speaker was housed during these works for under 5% of that cost, partly because Lindsay Hoyle's very tight on expenditure, but partly because what they were proposing was ridiculously over-engineered. What they need to do is carry on with the important structural works that are natural in any old building. So they're now beginning the works on the Victoria Tower, having done the Elizabeth Tower. That's just part of a long-term programme, if it's done sensibly. Of course it costs money, but not a fraction of the tens of billions that's being talked about. It's nothing like that. You then need to get away from propaganda. I once had a tour of the basement. Actually, I had several tours of the basement. And on one of them, it was COVID times, and nobody was able to do it. And the whips wanted a tour. So I said, all right, I'll do it. I've been down lots of times. I'll take them round. Of course, somebody was then immediately found. Fortunately, he turned out to be the person who ran things in the basement. And instead of having all these wires pointed to and told nobody knows what they do, he said, oh, yes, of course I know what they all do. I know how these systems work. I'm able to get on with it. And there's a great deal of propaganda that wants to spend huge amounts of money on fundamentally changing what the Houses of Parliament is like. Have you seen the pictures of the new visitor centre?
I have not.
They put this in their document, and of the new education centre. You've got an education centre. It was only built about 15 years ago. You don't need to build a new one. So, yes, you need to do the fire safety work, which actually Lindsay Hoyle and I, the Speaker, when I was leader, were really keen to do properly and early to protect the building from catastrophic fire. That's been done in the basement. The basement has one of the most sophisticated fire suppression systems you could find. It needs to be done in the attics. Okay. But it's not about a tens of billions of pounds scheme, which is just crazy.
My colleagues are just getting those photographs up that you've referenced. Yes, that I see where you're concerned. Lastly on this, they talk of a full decant, i.e. moving everyone out of the palace. Is that something that would gain your support or concerns?
Oh, no, I think the full decant is all about getting people out and probably never getting them back in. A lot of people want to turn it into a museum. And you spend all this money, you don't then use it. Buckingham Palace has had complete rewiring, completely plumbing, all of this work done. It's a bit smaller than the Palace of Westminster, but not enormously so. They've done that for a few hundred million pounds, I think about £400 million. The Palace of Westminster is talking about tens of billions of pounds. And when I was leader of the House, I kept on saying, why didn't we ask Buckingham Palace what they've done?
Yes.
And nobody was ever interested in doing that.
One other aspect I must discuss with you, which is another perhaps factor of the degree of rottenness within this current parliament. Sir Keir Starmer's defence of the appointment of Peter Mandelson as our man in Washington. Sir Jacob.
Well, it doesn't hold any water at all. Everyone's always known Peter Mandelson was a liar. So for Starmer to pretend with a degree of shock that Mandelson lied to him shows a degree of naivety unbecoming a British Prime Minister. I said to one of my children they should remember what's happening over these days because this is going to be the biggest political scandal of their lifetimes. This degree of corruption is something that almost never happens in British politics. I think it compares with the Marconi scandal, which is over 100 years ago.
Is it Profumo? It's worse
than Profumo. It is much worse than Profumo. The idea that a British Secretary of State effectively took money, or money went to his boyfriend at the point at which he was giving secrets to a paedophile, is a scandal I can't think of an equivalent to, actually.
Sir Jacob, always enjoy speaking. The best wishes to your family. Thank you. Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, former leader of the House of Commons. Listening to that, Dr. Ruth Fox, director of the Hansard Society. Just briefly, Doctor, a word on what the Hansard Society does, just to inform my listeners. Good morning to you, Doctor.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, so the Hansard Society is an independent charity, and we work through research and education to develop ideas about how Parliament can be improved and made more effective, and also how you can enhance public understanding of how it works and what it does.
I think everyone would accept, and I'm sure you've been in the buildings as well, improvement is needed. But it was listening, yeah. It was interesting listening to Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg there. He has a rather different cost structure. Your take on that?
Well, I have some sympathy for the concerns. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, the lowest cost it could be would be about $8.4 billion, taking, you know, what, something like 19 to 24 years. And as you say, you know, the upper end could be something as bad as $39 billion lasting 60. But I think the important thing to remember here is that the cheapest, the most cost effective and the lowest risk option is both houses leaving Parliament. And this idea that I think the national legislature can run in the middle of a building site for the biggest heritage restoration project in the world ever undertaken, I think is just for the birds. And one of the reasons that, you know, we are in this position is that the politicians, Jacob's party and others, for the last 30, 40 years, have failed to tackle this problem. They failed to properly invest in the building. They have, you know, not, you know, basically presided over this neglect, failed to confront the problem, and now the bill is what it is. I notice he didn't mention asbestos. Might be worth thinking about that.
Yes.
There's 2,500 locations of asbestos in the building. The majority of it actually in and around the House of Commons chamber. The best estimate on that, you'll appreciate how sensitive that is. The best estimate is that it's going to take 2.5 years, 3 years to remove that.
Goodness.
300 people working on it full time. That's where a lot of these costs come through.
Really enjoyed speaking with you. I'm sorry I have to leave it there. Doctor, we'll talk again about parliamentary matters. Thank you for your input. Dr. Ruth Fox, Director of the Hansard Society. 300 people, I'm just writing that down, working 3 years flat out. Right, that's a figure to consider. Should they go on the move? Or should they, as Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg is saying, actually check their spending to a degree? In other news, hey, let's get off to a theme park. That is, of course, the theme for Alton Towers, where they have announced that they will not allow some people with conditions such as autism or ADHD to use their disability queuing system this half term. So how much of a disability are those conditions? And are they taking their guests for a ride? 8:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a government minister has rejected suggestions that Sir Keir Starmer needs to sack his chief of staff in the wake of the Peter Mandelson scandal. The United States and Iran are due to hold their first direct talks in 8 months as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear program. And Sir Elton John's expected to give evidence later in the privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. LBC weather, cloudy, with outbreaks of rain pushing north, blustery downpours in the south, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A10 is closed southbound just after the M25 junction at Ballsmoor Lane. There are severe delays on the A10 back through Chesend, but also it's having a knock-on effect to the M25 anti-clockwise, which is now slow from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. Now elsewhere, the A13 is partially blocked eastbound at Basildon at the Five Bells interchange, and that's causing lengthy queues. Also very slow on the M4 eastbound to junction 4 at Heathrow following an accident. The problem jams continue as well on the trains. Avanti West Coast and London North Western are disrupted between Euston and Watford Junction. And Greater Anglia remain disrupted via Tottenham Hale after an investigation earlier.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Okay, done. Move that and... Oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's Best Family Electric SUV of the Year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car Award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Tony Offred, let's come to your reaction to the extraordinary expenditure of putting right the Houses of Parliament. Who phoned in first? Matthew in Heathrow. Matthew, what do you say? Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. I think it'll be a good idea for the King to make a gesture to say Houses of Parliament could move into Buckingham Palace, and it already has all the security there. It just makes financial sense.
How on earth is that going to work? Where is the King and where are the King and the Queen and his courtiers going to go?
Well, no, he doesn't stay. He's got his private office there. He could still keep his private office. But, I mean, it's not really used. And we've got all the garden at the back of Buckingham Palace. We could have marquees. The Buckingham Palace could still do their charity events and all the things they have to do there. But I think, this is a bedroom.
But if, let's just pick a country at random. Here we go. The King of Spain, I don't know, comes, a royal visit comes, and we're going to take them to a marquee in the back garden. No, it's not going to work, Matthew, is it? Thank you, Your Majesty, for arriving, King of Spain. Would you just like to make your way to that five-polar marquee at the back of the garden? No.
Well, you can still have the banquet in...
No!
I mean, the House of Parliament doesn't normally sit late at night too often.
No, we've got Ian Duncan Smith working in there and his committee, and we've got... No, I mean, it's an idea. I like the way that you've approached it, and you're trying to find a practical solution. But I don't know that Buckingham Palace, Buckhouse, BP, whatever you want to go. But Matthew, it's an idea. Let's see what others make of it, sir. Thank you. John in Birmingham. John, your reaction. Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello,
how are you,
sir?
Buddy? Absolute crazy, absolute lunacy. A couple of years ago, I had the privilege of being able to go and have a look around the House of Commons, the House of Lords.
Yes, yes.
And amazing building, the
it
history,
is, isn't it?
Honestly.
Yeah.
Best couple of hours I spent, but it's not fit for purpose. You walk through these security doors that look like they've come out of MI5 that have been fitted to a medieval castle.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. It's not good enough for what we need. Get the and you walk into the House of Commons chamber, there's about four MPs in there, and it's like, really? And we're going to spend $40 billion to try and just keep in on a daily basis? Let's move them out. I'm sure, what about the location of the new Chinese embassy? Surely it wouldn't cost us $40 billion to make something spectacular. That would be great to move it and turn the old House of Commons and Lords into a museum.
But the report says, and I take on board what Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg says, that this is almost effectively propaganda, but the report says, quote, and I quote, a real and rising risk the palace could be destroyed by a catastrophic event, close quote. So even if we do move them all to a super embassy site or whatever, we're still going to have to spend a lot of money to make sure the place doesn't fall down.
but we're not good at that as a country.
No, we're not.
Look
terrible.
At HS2.
No, terrible.
HS2 was what, 20 million? It's now however many billion. So I'm not going to get to see it because HS2 won't be ready in 60 years. So let's see what's going to happen.
Let's see what others make of that, John. There's a degree of scepticism. I think the idea of 61 years and whatever it was that I know, 39.2 billion pounds. John, again, an idea. I still don't know that we've solved it. Move them all out and the other place will still fall down. More on that in a moment. Let's get off to Alton Towers, as many of you will do, because it must be half-term this month, surely. Yeah, February half-term, must be. And for a trial period, Alton Towers is not going to allow some people with conditions such as autism, ADHD and anxiety to use what's called a disability queuing system. Merlin Entertainments, the owners of Alton Towers and many other attractions, provide a ride access pass to help visitors to its theme park who have difficulties queuing because of medical or emotional or disability needs. Cat Brown, author of Not a Bloody Trend, Understanding Life as an ADHD Adult, joins me now. Would you class ADHD and these other issues as a disability? And if so, why? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I mean, it entirely depends on if somebody is disabled by it. I am a 43-year-old woman. I am well socialised and obviously an adult. I don't need a queue pass. I went to Disneyland in the summer and I just put in my headphones and merrily waited an hour and a half to go on Space Mountain. However, if I'm somebody with a kid or I've got difficulties that are more profound than the ones that I experience, then yes, it's really going to make the difference between, you know, being able to have a nice day out with your family or not. And it's not just Alton Towers either. It's Legoland, it's Chessington World of Adventures, which are really popular with younger families.
What does the pass provide for, Kat? Are you aware of that? How does it physically work?
Oh, yes, I am. I initially, when I started seeing the headlines, assumed that it was literally just like a queue jump pass that you got on the day. No, it requires so much wrangling that actually, ironically, I would just not have the patience to do
really?
It.
Really? What do you have to
no,
do?
Not at all.
What hurdles must you clear?
Well, so about 3 months before you want to go to whichever theme park you're going to, you have to apply for something called a Nimbus Pass.
Right.
In which you send off proof of your disability or your kid's disability or whatever.
Yeah.
And they basically give you a class depending on what sort of additional accessibility needs your kid or you might require. And this is also so that adults can enjoy going to concerts properly. Once you've got that pass, then before you go, about sort of a week or two before, you have to apply for a thing called a rapid access pass, which is what Merlin Entertainment uses. And then if you're approved for that, and again, you've got to send off proof and everything, then you can book your visit. And then once you've got that, you've got to download this app and then you've got to choose what rides you go on. And again, I thought, okay, you just rock up to the front as if you've paid 90 quid or whatever to have a premium pass. No, you then you choose the ride that you and your family want to go on. And then you wait the same amount of time as everybody else, but just in a slightly different area of the park. So it just means that your kids or you or whatever are just not standing in line all the time. So it sounds like a massive faff. And I wouldn't do it, but then also I don't have children who might be going out of their loopy little minds.
Right. Let me ask you, as I have two sons, they're grown up now, but when they were little, I've got to be honest, they weren't fans of queuing for a long time. What is it in a child who has ADHD? What is the additional concern or stress that it could exhibit itself?
So it depends. I mean, I had more of an inattentive type of ADHD, which meant I was forever staring out of windows, daydreaming and inhaling books like they were going out of fashion.
Kat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but you're not diagnosed. And that's the thing. Everybody goes to the loo, but some people going to the loo 100 times a day is totally not normal. So it's all these sorts of things. Perhaps somebody who has hyperactive compulsive disorder, they're the ones who are always... Well, or who were, certainly in the 60s and 70s, were described as the naughty little boys who ruined things for everybody and were just bouncing out of their skins. That said, I've also got, like, 10 nibblings of varying ages, none of whom are neurodivergent. Not a lot of them like doing queues either.
No,
so
no
their
choice.
Parents then come occupied with things to stop them being tiny little angry nightmares whilst they're in there because they're kids and that's it. It's just that if you have a kid who has ADHD or autism, then you're basically playing on hard mode sometimes.
Lastly, was it worth it? 1 hour and 30 minutes? Was it Space Mountain you queued for?
I went on it 3 times. The queue was absolutely horrendous, but my God, what a ride.
Cat Brown wrote, it's not a bloody trend. Understanding life as an ADHD adult. Thank you for that, Cat. Emails and texts coming in on this. Duncan, my son has suffered with ADHD and Asperger's all his life. He's now 25 and he loves Alton Towers. He has a pass. It doesn't mean you queue jump. You queue jump. You go back at an allotted time. He gets very stressed if waiting. This is a bad move for Alton Towers, but to be honest, they're in a difficult position because year on year there are more people using these passes. And I don't think they're legitimate users. Talking about queuing in the first hour, about this time actually, we told you about the problems with this implementation of special passes across the EU. This is as a result of Brexit that we all have to go through these various checks. And estate agents, travel agents and other travel experts warning of considerable delays. Sarah says, we've just been to Spain. We had to go through this new biometric system. Out of six of us travelling together, only one of us was able to successfully use the machine for our fingerprints. We kept trying. In the end, the member of staff advised us to go through passport control, and it was happening to loads of people. He was able to go through the new e-gate, but the rest of us had to queue and use passport control. Robin Kent, the new entry and exit systems are a complete joke. You're only supposed to do it once and then you're registered. So far, I've done it four times in Spain, both going into Spain and leaving. We have a house there, so frequently travel, and every time we have to register. Oh, it's all happening in Spain. Here we go. Ajit in Chislehurst. Ironically, the non-EU queue was quicker and faster at Malaga Airport over the weekend. I've been through this process. It's quite a simple one. Once you register, except for the final pinch point of having to get your passport stamped. All right, we'll come back to that. Bob, you're going to be the next caller on the idea that the Houses of Parliament might have what's called a full decant, move out, to allow a full rebuild. I'll give you the idea, by the way, of some of the issues over there, falling masonry and what are called fire incidents, and also what are called bizarrely asbestos incidents. I'll give you the background to that. And then, arguably, possibly one of my favourite stories, if not of the day, possibly of all time. Well, as you know, the Winter Olympics kick off today and, well, winning the ski jump could come down to a matter of inches. So what is the idea that men can inject acid into their penis to gain those extra inches upon their landing, I hasten to add. Yep, that's the headline. What's the reality? Stay tuned, it's after this. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari here. I still like the idea there's only one way to find out. LBC's Henry Ryan, but apparently I'm not allowed to do it. 8:30, Nick Ferrari at breakfast. News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has rejected suggestions that Keir Starmer needs to sack his top advisor in the wake of the Peter Mandelson scandal. Mike Tapp has told Nick that Morgan McSweeney has helped to turn the Labour Party around and get elected. The US and Iran are due to start talks in Oman later as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear program. President Trump's repeatedly threatened military action if no diplomatic solutions found. And Sir Elton John's expected to give evidence later in the privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He joins the likes of Prince Harry and Liz Hurley in bringing legal action against Associated Newspapers Limited. A&L denies any wrongdoing. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, blustery, sometimes thundery downpours in the south later. A high of 12 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
with the calls for Keir Starmer's resignation getting louder and louder, we ask, is that really fair, or is it just the latest example of Westminster hypocrisy?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
At
Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's Big Shop at lidl.co.uk/save more. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 2nd of the 2nd, 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Mummy, please can you tell me a bedtime story?
Once upon a time, there was a very tired mummy who'd been busy all day. And basically, she was too knackered to cook, so she ordered herself sweet and sour chicken, special fried rice and some prawn crackers on Uber Eats instead.
That's not a very good story, Mummy.
Great ending, though.
When you've done enough, Uber Eats and get your favourite restaurants delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
I've looked after my kids since they were born. Now they've got kids, I still want to look after them. I don't want them struggling to make decisions about my money or my health if I can't. So we made a lasting power of attorney. Now, if I can't speak for myself, they'll speak for me. It's a weight off for all of us, isn't it?
Yes, Mum.
Lasting power of attorney. Search your voice, your decision.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
If you're just joining us at 8:33, because the alarm sounded 3 minutes ago, we're talking about how the Houses of Parliament are rotten. No, not politically, but rather structurally. And the rebuild could take 61 years. Yes, that'll be 61 years, Governor. All right, thank you. And £39.2 billion, unless there's what's called a full decant. In other words, they move them out. Then we can bring it in at anywhere between 19 and 24 years and around £15.6 billion. There are 250 miles of cabling that need to be relaid. Since 2016, there have been 36 fires, 12 asbestos incidents and 19 occasions when stonemasonry has crumbled. There is, quotes, a real and rising risk the palace could be destroyed by a catastrophic event. Parts of it date back, of course, centuries. Well, most of it actually dates back, apart from these new wounds, centuries. But I have to say, Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, who, of course, is an experienced parliamentarian, pointed out that the Buckingham Palace, the complete rebuild, rewiring, replumbing of Buckingham Palace, which is a bit smaller than the Palace of Westminster, came at around £400 million. He says this is effectively propaganda. What's the reality, and what do you think should happen? Bob's in Romford. Bob, you have a novel idea, I understand. What is it?
Well, I've got several novel ideas. First thing you've got to think about is what sort of a parliament do you want? Do you want to carry on with an adversarial one with them facing each other and shouting and screaming? Or do they need proper desks like you've got in Scotland or you've got in the Senate, you know?
Okay, you want a complete rebuild and rethink then, Bob?
Yeah, you want. I mean, yeah, that would take them 20 years, so that's another £42 billion.
Why would you want to do that? What benefit do you think that would bring?
Well, I mean, do you really believe that the adversarial method that we've got at the moment serves us particularly well?
Well, I don't know that people in Scotland would say that it's absolutely crash hot up there either. So it's as good as we can get.
That's a discussion. I mean, in 62 years, what sort of a parliament would we need? Well, what sort of equipment would we have, you know? I mean, it'd probably be AI, it'd just be computers, wouldn't it?
But the MPs wouldn't be AI, I don't think, will they? What do you think?
And then you've got to say, how many MPs are you going to need?
Yeah, we've got too many. I mean, that's ludicrous.
Too many, yeah.
We should pay a smaller maybe, number, 300. More money.
Yeah, and then I'd put it in the centre of the country somewhere like Stoke-on-Trent. It's got beautiful parks, it's got beautiful houses,
Bob. I'm sure you're aware that it's not just the Palace of Westminster, it's what's called Whitehall. So all the government departments are there, and the ministers and the Secretary of State, in most instances, walk to their meetings. So where the hell are they all going to go in Stoke-on-Trent?
Well, there's plenty of places, isn't there? You know,
I don't know. I'm not familiar with Stoke-on-Trent, I'm afraid. I'm obviously missing out on something.
Beautiful parks.
Right, but to my point, what about all the office sites that are going to be...
Empty.
Are you from the Stoke-on-Trent Tourist Board?
No.
What is your interest in Stoke-on-Trent? Are you the ambassador for Stoke-on-Trent?
Yeah, I'd be the ambassador for Stoke-on-Trent. Oh,
excellent. Tell me you haven't got a criminal record and you're not a close friend of Jeffrey Epstein.
No.
Right, I believe you. You've got the job. Bob, advocating for Stoke-on-Trent. Let's see if others go for that. Thanks for your input. Look after yourself. Have a good weekend down in Romford. And we'll take more of your ideas in a moment. Now, having been in this business for over 40 years, I didn't think I'd ever read your story such as this. In the Olympic ski jumping, the gold can be won by a matter of inches. This has never been truer than at the 2026 Winter Olympics, according to allegations under scrutiny by anti-doping chiefs. It gets underway today in Milan. Officials have been looking into claims that Olympic ski jumpers have injected acid into their penises. These are obviously male jumpers. Well, if I'm allowed to say male in these, male jumpers, to enhance their performance in the sport. Well, I don't know what the heck is going on, but fortunately we found someone who does. John Brewer is Professor of Applied Sports Science, former chair of British skiing at the Sochi Winter Olympics, which was about just over 10 years ago, and joins me now. I can see you chuckling down the video link, Professor, but you're meant to be the expert who tells us how this works. What is going on? Good morning.
Well, morning, Nick. Well, I guess when it comes to the suits that the ski jumpers wear, size does matter. And at the start of each season, they're all scanned. All the skiers are scanned to work out the surface area of their body. And then the suits that they wear must be equivalent, or very closely equivalent, to the surface area of the body.
Right.
Because you know that if you are going down a mountain, parachuting, that the larger the size of the wing, the more resistance you have, and therefore the further you will go. So if you can make that ski suit significantly bigger than the skier themselves, it provides more resistance. It acts more like a wing or a parachute in the air. And clearly they will, how should we put it, go for a little bit longer.
For every 2 centimetre increase in a suit size, it gives a lift increase of some 5% it says here. So what sort of distance might that equal? Do we have any idea, John?
Well, they go quite long distances. There are different ski jump events that they do, depending on the height from the ramp that they start from. But you could be looking at 100, 120 metres or so for a really good ski jump.
Wow.
So if you can add another metre, 2 metres, 3 metres even to your length, then you are more likely to be on the podium winning a medal than towards the back of the field not winning a medal. And that's true in nearly all the Winter Olympic sports, Nick. The difference between success and failure is thousandths of a second, not just tenths of a second. If you look at the ice events such as the luge and the skeleton, where we hopefully will do pretty well, it's the same in the ski jumping. That difference between success and failure is very, very small. The key thing is whether this method, this process, will ultimately be deemed to be illegal by perhaps the World Anti-Doping Agency.
Who's blown the whistle on this practice? Who's come up with what might be going on?
Well, there was a German newspaper that ran the story a few months ago, and they are claiming that some nations are using this enhancement, shall we say, to make them go for longer in the air. As I said, that will make a big difference. And when you're competing for medals, medals mean prestige, they mean money for the governing bodies of sport, they mean money for the athletes, so there is a lot at stake. And the World Anti-Doping Agency are effectively the policing body, not just for banned substances, but for banned processes in sport. And I think what they will do is take a long and hard look at this and decide whether or not at some point the injection of this acid into the male, should we say, down below area is a process that they may wish to ban. But it certainly won't happen by Monday, which is when the ski jump starts. It takes at least a year or two for those processes to be banned. So I think any skier who has already had that process, and bear in mind the effects last for about 18 months after the injection, will know that they can compete in the Olympic Games on Monday, and indeed with the same benefit for the rest of the season and perhaps even into next season as well.
You know, it seems to defy the normal law of aerodynamics, doesn't it? Because, you know, when they design cars, there's no reason why you should. You're chaired the scheme. But they sort of try and make a car as sloped as they can. And if it's like a, you know, big old-fashioned Land Rover, it's just... But this is the exact opposite, John.
Yes, it is. And it's all about the resistance that you can create. And bear in mind that these days, a lot of the Olympic sports will use wind tunnels, they'll use simulators, they use all sorts of different scientific techniques, very similar to the ways that Formula One make sure that their cars are aerodynamic, to work out what little tweaks that they can make to get that extra distance. So I'm sure the ski jumping federations who are using this technique or thinking of using this technique will have gone through that very rigorous process and will know whether the extra resistance in a certain area is likely to result in further length.
All right. As we wait for the whole Winter Olympics to kick off, can you give us an idea? Where do hopes lie for the British team, do you think, John? Where are we strong? Where might we celebrate some gongs?
Target of 4 to 8 medals. Big hopes probably in the skeleton, which is effectively jumping on a T-tray and going downhill headfirst as fast as you can. Matt Weston and Marcus White are our two big hopes there. possibly in the skiing as well, Charlotte Banks in the freestyle skiing and snowboarding. So, yeah, we're positive that 4 to 8 medals is a target. When I was chair of British Skiing, we won our first ever medal on snow with Jenny Jones. Hopefully that will be surpassed and we'll see some decent medal hauls from a country, Nick, that isn't necessarily fully adept to winter sports. We don't have the mountains or the snow, but we do have the athletes and the technology and the investment that will hopefully reap some rewards over the next 2 or 3 weeks.
And I don't doubt for a moment we have the guts and determination. John, thanks for your time today. John Brewer, Professor of Applied Sports Science, former chair of the British Skiing at the Sochi Winter Olympics, so perhaps size does matter after all. If the effects last 18 months, I think the idea of it's only one way to find out, LBC said, that's definitely scotched now, I fear. 8:43, let's go back to matters of Parliament. Matt in Kendal. Do we need to fully decant them, i.e. move them out? Or what's the way forward on this? Good morning.
I'm not really sure on where we would move them to, but I think the biggest thing I'm concerned about is how do you lock in a price for 61 years?
Well, they do say it allows for inflation, but dear God, no one knows. No one really knows what's going to happen over the 6 months, let alone 60 years.
You only have to look at things like HS2, though, don't you, to see how much costs spiral out of control very quickly. So, yeah, that would be my biggest concern. How are they going to keep on top of that?
If we take Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg's figures, and he said Buckingham Palace came in at £400 million, and they're saying that if they did it as speedily as they possibly could, you'd be looking at around £15 billion. Let's say we're talking about £2 or £3 billion. I'm going to argue you have to spend it. It's money well spent. It is an historic landmark. It's part of the fabric, not just of London or of England, but the whole of the United Kingdom. Matt?
Yeah, oh, no, I agree. We definitely need to keep it. It's extremely important, but it is, to me, it just come down to how are we going to keep a handle on the costs? Because we've shown time and time again in this country that whether it be infrastructure projects, we just can't seem to keep a lid on it.
Thanks for that, Matt. Coming up later in the show, Sir Keir Starmer's future, the next 48 hours could dictate it. As MPs, understandably and rightly, scatter from Westminster and go out in their constituencies and they hold their surgeries or they possibly attend local events, whatever they might be, they'll pick up what people are saying. But you don't have to hope that a Labour MP will knock on your door for some canvassing. You can tell me after nine. If a Labour MP were to knock on your door, or you were to see him or her at an event, or you were to bump into them, what would you tell them about the performance of their leader and your Prime Minister? So you don't need to go to surgery, you don't need to try and seek him or her out at the opening of a local hospital, whatever it might be. You can tell me. We're doing that after nine. And also after nine, John definitely will be standing when he goes to the High Court later in that case against the publishers of the Daily Mail. We'll have a legal look ahead to that. It's 8:45, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A government minister's rejected suggestions that Sir Keir Starmer needs to sack his top advisor in the wake of the Peter Mandelson scandal. The US and Iran are due to hold their first direct talks in 8 months later as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear program. And the Home Office says nearly 60,000 illegal migrants and criminals have been deported since the 2024 general election. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, blustery downpours in the south, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue in North London with the A10 being closed southbound. It's closed just after the M25 junction from Ballsmore Lane down to Turkey Street. It's after an accident that happened around 6:30 this morning. And there are delays all the way back to Chesham, but also back onto the M25 from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. The whole area is extremely congested. Elsewhere, there are delays on the M4 eastbound to junction 4 at Heathrow. That's because of an accident. There's a lane closed now on the exit slip road, but there are still delays back into the main carriageway from the M25 junction. Also, the problems on the trains continue of anti-West Coast and London Northwestern are delayed between Euston and Watford Junction.
This is LBC.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious at best, You deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the River Cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save more. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Prices check 2nd of the 2nd, 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
Come on, quick, we have to run.
Wait, what? Run to where?
The mini sale event. Keep up.
What? Huh?
The mini sale event. Savings across the range, even on the iconic Mini Cooper.
Whoa!
And that's on top of all existing offers.
Right, let's pick up the pace.
The mini sale event. Amazing offers to act fast on. 5th to the 9th of February at your local mini retailer. Applicable on new mini orders placed during the sale event and registered by the 30th of June 2026. Visit mini.co.uk/sale event.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 to 9, Simon coming to you. You will be the next caller concerning the refurb of the House of Parliament. Let me just, if you can, Simon, give me a minute to bring in some of those who sent, kind enough to send their texts and their emails. Ian, the Palace of Westminster is a stunning building and a symbol of democracy, but it should be mothballed and turned into a partial museum. We need a brand new Parliament building, which could be built for much less than £40 billion and in much less time than 61 years. Ian, I mean, as long as you want to retain it, as long as no one's saying let it fall down, but that doesn't solve the problem. In the last 9 years, there have been 36 fires, 12 asbestos incidents, and 19 times of stonemasonry falling. And the politicians have been warned there's a real, I quote, real and rising risk it could be destroyed. Well, so that doesn't, I don't think, really solves the problem. Same subject, this comes in. Franz, why didn't they do the work in the last 14 years when the Conservatives were in power? Franz, I'm afraid there's been no major structural work since just after the Second World War, when it was feared that the bombing could have damaged some of the foundations. That was the last major work of any sort. So governments of every colour, red, blue, and even a bit of a Lib Demery, or Liberals as they were, they've all been complicit in this. Guy in Lincolnshire makes a very good point. Regarding the Houses of Parliament, did they just get two quotes, or did they do a Starmer and believe what they were told? And lastly, Robin Somerset. Houses of Parliament refurb. Perhaps we could use the same contractors being used to build the new Chinese embassy. What could possibly go wrong with that? Well, I think it was Dan in Kent who said that, and this is an equally point, is it the same people who cleared the Chinese embassy, who cleared Peter Mandelson for Sir Keir Starmer, who cleared the building of the Chinese embassy? Right, let's go to the calls. Simon in Crawley. Simon, what's your solution? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I'm a first-time caller, so
please go easy. How long have you been listening to me, sir?
Oh, blimey. 20 years.
Wow. Don't leave another 20, mate. I won't be here.
I'll try not to, mate. No, I don't think I'll be here either, no. No, I don't mean that. But 40 billion is a lot of money, isn't it?
I think that's what they've been putting into it. Amount of money, mate. Fast.
Yeah, yeah. I'm quite aggrieved that, you know, that I'm thinking about all the money that our stoppages have gone on Prince Andrew over the last 20, mm-hmm. 30 years. So yep. I'm thinking, can we not use the money sensibly, as in, why not go to the poorest area of England? Somewhere, I can think of some streets in Liverpool where you might buy houses for £5,000 each and they could be housed in there. Maybe with the poorest transport links, high crime rates, low cost of living, right. Poor education, abandoned high streets. That would then help them, I think. Because they're usually most, I think apart from people like Lisa Nandy or Angela Rayner, most of them have been brought up in private schools and had a very costly upbringing.
Right.
And, perhaps they should, you know, and rather than commuting between the Cotswolds and London every weekend, maybe they should go somewhere like further up north, like Hull, perhaps, and see how real people live.
Right.
And then you might attract the right people to the profession of being an MP.
I hear what you're saying. I think we shouldn't tar them all with the same brush. And I agree. Have that extraordinary gilded lifestyle is declining. But, why do we want to effectively make our politicians live in the most dire of circumstances?
Who would we
attract to the gig then?
If you go back historically,
yeah.
The reason why the River Thames was cleared up back sewage. In the 1800s yeah. was because yeah. of sewage smell, and that made them sort it out. So if you put them in the mess and the muck, they'll actually do something rather than talk about it.
Right.
This is my theory, and I think I'd rather spend 100, 200 billion on putting a new parliament somewhere like that, because that money would go into the local area to get shops that actually can be used.
Understandably, I don't think you hold our politicians in much high regard at the moment, Simon.
Well, I don't. I have to be honest. I work I've worked in corporate life for a long time, and
yeah.
I don't think many people running companies can be held in much regard, because a lot of them just seem to talk about stuff, but they haven't got the bravery, because they're all thinking about themselves and not about the bigger picture. How do we make our country get back on its feet and become the way that it was? And I'm not one of these Farage-type people,
right.
You know, who's another guy from a cosseted upbringing. I believe in good characters. I don't care what anyone's background is, racially or religious-wise. You know, we all are human beings, and 99.9% of us are good people, the ones that get on and have a good family and a good life together.
Do call me again, Simon. First time in 20 years. Grateful for your input. Simon's got a radical idea. Move them all off to deprived areas. Let them see how so many folk live. But, I mean, again, on a cost footing, I don't know that makes sense. And then there's the idea. Personally, if I had my way, I would cut radically the number of MPs. I don't think we need 600 plus. And I would pay them considerably more. And then hopefully they wouldn't sidle up to rich American paedophiles. Barry's in Maidenhead. Barry, your reaction. Good morning. What's the solution?
Yeah, morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you again. I think part of the challenge is that having worked in the Palace of Westminster, because of the way that the works have been contracted historically, there is just like, especially relating to things like cabling around the building, you just have literally nests of cables on top of nests of cables. Mm. And no one knows necessarily what's at the other end, because they've kept in all of the legacy equipment, because no one wants to remove it and pull the plug on something at the other end that they might need. And, you know, from an infrastructure standpoint, the place needs to be emptied and completely gutted. But because of the way that the government procurement works with the frameworks, it will be the same big companies that will be getting that, and we'll see the same big wastage. Whereas what we could do is use all of the empty government and MOD buildings in London, put farm all of the MPs out to there, and go from there and just find one place that they can all meet, I think.
What's the most extreme example of that you've seen, having worked in and around there, of the dilapidation?
There's a couple of staircases that we've worked in, not related to the stairs, but where there are literally trunkings of cables that are about half a metre thick, with hundreds and hundreds of cables in. And now with, again, all of the broadcast equipment that's in there as well, nobody really knows what's at the end of each cable, and
fire risk, isn't it?
At the same time, yes, but it's, again, that's part of the challenge that you have with doing things in historic buildings. But you would need to completely gut it. They've tried a few times to contract through the government procurement to to have people go and investigate the cabling and other, you know, areas of the palace. But no one really wants to take it on because it's just too big a job while it's still occupied.
We're having a load of ideas, Barry. Barry's actually worked in there. There's other ideas that we all move to Stoke-on-Trent. We move them all to Liverpool. We do a Chinese-style embassy. Barry, thanks for your input. 3 to 9. Time for at least one more. Samina in Tooting. I'm told you have an idea. You've got what's called a solution. What is it?
Yes, good morning. And I'm surprised that morning, Nick. I'm surprised nobody else has suggested it.
Uh-oh,
Queen Elizabeth Conference Centre, Parliament Square.
Yes, I know it well.
Yes, all the MPs can stay in Portcullis House, where their offices are. They're near Whitehall. And then QE2 has quite a big sort of like conference area. They can get in a set from one of the films for the Parliament debates, you know, that they've used for the film sets.
You know that there are thousands of people who work in the Palace of Wales, and not just the MPs. You know there's, I should need to get the number, it's hundreds, it might even be over 1,000 people. Where are they all going to sit?
Do you know in QE2, it's got about
I do know the
floors.
QE2 Centre, yes.
Well, there's about 6 floors, there's lots of spaces there, lots of huge rooms. They can hot desk and share big spaces together.
Why are we treating them in this fashion?
Treating who? The people who work there?
The MPs
there?
And their staff. Oh. Why are we treating...
Well, the MPs will stay in Portcullis House.
Right.
They'll still have the free canteens. They can set up a pub there, so they get their...
discounted beers and wines and everything, yes.
And QE2 is quite safe, quite modern building as well.
Yes.
Huge spaces, 6 floors, so easily fit in 1,000 members of staff, Nick. So.
All right, well, let's put it with another idea. So far, we're off to Stoke-on-Trent. We're going to do a Chinese-style embassy. We're moving into Buckingham Palace. We're moving into the QE2 Centre. All sorts of different ideas. In reality, isn't it, somewhere between the two? Buckingham Palace total refurb, £400 million, I am told. The cheapest quote on this is something in the region of £16 billion. This can't be put off forever. Of course, it's quite obvious that no government wants to come into power saying, right, thanks very much for electing us. We're now going to spend £10 billion on nice offices for ourselves. Well, could we have a hospital? You know which way the money's going to go. But I sense that conversation will continue. All right, coming up after the news... 48 hours to determine the future of our Prime Minister, because something could be knocking at your door. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Because as Labour MPs go back to their constituencies, and they'll do some canvassing with the May elections just around the corner, and a lot of canvassing in Gorton, if you were to bump into a Labour MP, what would you tell him or her about their leader and his future? Plus, we'll do a legal look ahead to Sir Elton John giving evidence in the High Court in that case involving the Daily Mail. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, ministers have defended Keir Starmer following suggestions he needs to sack his top team following the Peter Mandelson scandal. Keir Starmer's admitted that he knew of Lord Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, but says he repeatedly lied about it. Backbenchers are now pressuring Keir to change his advisers in the wake of the saga. But Government Minister Mike Tapp has told Nick he has full confidence in the Prime Minister and his Chief of Staff.
I am firm in saying that Keir Starmer is working hard to turn the country around from an extremely difficult position that we've inherited.
Right, but is Mr McSweeney part of that team? Do you still have full confidence in him? Should he stay in post?
Well, look, the appointment of the team around Keir Starmer is for him, but my personal opinion on Morgan McSweeney is that he's always been very effective. He's helped turn the Labour Party around. He's helped get us elected.
Peter Mandelson denies any wrongdoing in relation to Jeffrey Epstein. The United States and Iran are due to start talks in Oman later as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear program. President Trump has repeatedly threatened military action if no diplomatic solution is found. The Home Office says nearly 60,000 illegal migrants and criminals have been deported since the 2024 general election. 15,000 people have been removed, while 43,000 others have left voluntarily. More than 65,000 people have arrived in the UK on small boats since Labour came to power. Holidaymakers are being warned of long queues at airports across Europe this summer. A new biometric passport system is being rolled out, which could lead to six-hour waits at peak times. The European Commission has played down those concerns, though. Travel expert Julia Bosaid has told Nick that the system has been causing significant issues.
It's the pinch points that you're getting when multiple flights are arriving at key destinations at the same time, where we still have to, as British passport holders, we still have to undertake the biometrics, scan our passports, do the fingerprints, which add on minutes, but we're still having to queue to get our passport stamped. So the knock-on impact of that just means in some destinations, we've seen it in Lisbon, we've seen it in Geneva, they've actually switched those machines off because the bottleneck is just too much.
And the Winter Olympics will officially open later in northern Italy. The event will be split between Milan and the town of Cortina in the Dolomites. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 52 at 10,256. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, some blustery downpours in the south later, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
This Valentine's Day, prepare to fall in love again.
Heathcliff.
Catherine.
From Academy Award-winning filmmaker Emerald Fennell.
Why did you leave me?
Why did you betray your old heart?
Starring Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi.
I will not have you near her.
Did you think it would stop me?
Featuring original songs by Charlie XCX.
Whatever our souls are made of, his and mine are the same.
Wuthering Heights. In cinemas February 13. Book tickets now.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine on Friday, February the 6th. 48 hours to determine the future and fate of the Prime Minister. I know it's a bit tabloidy or tabloidies, but it's a reality, isn't it? As the MPs quite rightly scatter to the four winds and go back to their constituencies, what are they going to hear? Remember, there's a lot of campaigning going on in one particular part of the country, and there's some campaigning going on for those local elections. You don't have to wait for the knock on the door from a Labour MP or a Labour canvasser. You can tell me what you'd want to tell them over the weekend. In other news, the NHS to recruit a nurse specialising in cousin marriage for Bradford. A high number of some parts of the city there, people of Pakistani origin, marrying their cousins. I'm very fond of my cousins, but I certainly wouldn't want to marry any of them. Would it be right anyway? Well, a little under a couple of years ago, this idea was supported in Parliament by independent MP Iqbal Mohammed.
The reason the practice is so common is that ordinary people see family intermarriage overall as something that is very positive.
And we're off to the High Court, fortunately only as observers. Sir Elton John giving evidence in that case against the Daily Mail. We'll have a legal look ahead.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
D-Day for the Prime Minister over the weekend, as some of his team, some of his colleagues, and of course Labour Party members take to the door to do that canvassing. By the way, can I just say, we've just celebrated the first year of my, quotes, new producer working for me. I think this is some of her finest work.
Someone's knocking at the door, somebody ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door, somebody's ringing the bell.
You can see, if nothing else, she has a sense of humour. She probably needs to work with me and see me every morning just after six. There we are, so thank you very much for that. Now, what is the reality if someone was knocking on your door or ringing your bell? Hello, I'm from the Labour Party. Can I count on your support in the upcoming by-election? Hello, I'm from the Labour Party. Can I count on your upcoming support in the local elections? Well, I want to tell you this about Sir Keir Starmer. What would you say? Now, in the first hour of the show, on the round, Minister for Migration and Citizenship Mike Tapp. I should say they have got a headline to celebrate. They're pointing to 60,000 foreign illegal arrivals or criminals being deported. It's the highest number for some years, so let's give them credit there. But I did ask him when we might first expect to see the non-sensitive files in relation to that failed vetting of Peter Mandelson.
I think sign of good government and good leadership is not necessarily the mistakes you make, but it's owning them and it's acting on them. And this transparency and releasing all the documents will ensure and mean that we do never make these mistakes again. On your specific question...
How on earth can you suggest Sir Keir Starmer owns it, Minister? He said he, quotes, barely knew Jeffrey Epstein. He just needed to do a Google search. He must have known the nickname Scandalson and the Prince of Darkness, and this is a trained barrister. Give me a break.
It's public knowledge, isn't it, that Manderson had that relationship with Epstein at the time of...
Well, it wasn't for Sir Keir Starmer. He believed him when, quotes, he barely knew Epstein.
How well he knew him, I don't know, but what I do know is that
I had a bridge to sell Sir Keir Starmer.
The relationship between Epstein and Mandelson was put to Mandelson during vetting. He lied, he weaseled, he tricked.
But Mr. Tapp, the Prime Minister is a barrister. He would have been in court and been lied. His skills, presumably as a barrister and a DPP, are to see through that, Mr. Tapp.
The Prime Minister wasn't the one conducting the vetting. He wasn't the vetting officer. And by the way, I just want to make it clear that I'm not blaming the vetting procedure or officer, but what we need to do is at the time that all of this is released, which won't be too long, I hope, we can go through all of these mistakes and then we can rectify them so it never happens again.
So when might we see the first file?
On your specific question,
yes.
To be completely honest with you, I don't know exactly when, but it will be in the next few weeks and months.
Now, with a storm or scandal of this size, it's hardly surprising that almost as soon as I sat down, I was taking your calls on this in the first hour of the show. Here's a little of what you were telling me. Starting with Amanda in Croydon.
You should be cynical as a barrister. You know, you should, and you should be scrutinising everything, and challenging and questioning. And the fact that that Peter Mandelson had been fired twice from a public sector high profile roles was known that he was still friends with a paedophile.
Guy in Cleethorpes.
Absolutely pitiful apology. He's supposed to be a forensic solicitor. It's just beyond belief.
He's in Broxbourne.
He's jumped twice, hasn't he, Mandelson? He's jumped twice before he
jumped and pushed, yeah.
Also, Nick, I wonder if they'll brush this under the carpet and make him go away quietly.
And all those concerns are very valid. To Alex in Whetstone, there's a knock on the door, there's a ring on the bell. What would you say to a Labour canvasser or MP? Morning.
Morning, Nick. I'd say have a good look in the mirror. There's only one way that Keir can own this properly, and that is to resign. He's brought the country into disgrace. He's either an enabler or he's incompetent. I can't understand what's going on. I can't understand people defending him.
The defence is that the vetting procedure did not work properly and that I believed... this is Sir Keir talking. I believe him when he said he barely knew Epstein.
So then he's incompetent. We all know that Mandy's a creep. We can all say that. Everyone knows that.
Mm-hmm. I think we can allow that to go, yes, absolutely.
So in that case, by allowing him to get the job, he's enabling him, which means that he's complicit in what's going on. And he's not thinking about the women.
It's too late, I believe, now. But had this, when it first blew up, and bear in mind, he just got off the plane from Japan and from China when it first got ugly. Was there a form of words he could have said then that would have dealt with it and perhaps retrieved the situation? Or was he always doomed, Alex?
I think he was doomed as soon as he started to try and stall the information getting out.
But that's what I'm saying. If he'd said on Monday morning, 9 o'clock, right, I'm terribly sorry, I got this completely wrong. I should have listened. I don't know why I believed him. I apologise. I am in the wrong. Would that have retrieved it? Or, of course, does that show weakness?
Well, a translation of that is, I'm incompetent. Why am I running the country?
Okay, well, there's no shortage, no doubt about where you stand on that. Alex, thank you. Let's go to Paris. Tom. Hello, Tom. Do you live there, or are you there on holiday or business? What's the story? Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Nick. I live in Paris. I've been working in France now for over 25 years.
Is this making headlines or TV bulletins or radio bulletins in France?
Not really. Not as much as I'd like it to. No, not at all. There aren't many French people involved in the Epstein files, as far as I'm aware. So they've got away with it to a certain extent. But yeah, I've been following it closely from afar.
Okay. Well, not that far. Tell me what your view is.
So, to be honest, Nick, I've never phoned in into a radio station in my life. It's the first time I've ever done it.
Thank you.
I'm just absolutely furious about the whole thing because, from my point of view, there's no need for a vetting system. There's no even need for it. You've got Peter Mandelson, who's been sacked already twice from the cabinet, who's been known to be dodgy. He's quite creepy and that kind of stuff. That's my own opinion, personal opinion.
Yeah, of course,
but And when there's a, if there's a whiff of a scandal, you don't go near there. It's like a job interview. If you're bringing someone in for a job interview and you know certain things, you ask certain questions maybe, but if you just think, oh, this is a bit dodgy, I'm not going to go there. So I don't understand why. I just think Keir Starmer thought that he'd get away with it.
And let me put this to you. I hear what you say. And obviously, I am in London and you're in Paris, and I was very fortunate to have a lunch yesterday with some journalists who are very much in the know, let's put it like that. And the equation, Tom, seems to be this, and you respond. We have Trump in the White House. This is not going to be an ordinary White House. There is no point sending a career diplomat. We need a mover and shaker, possibly even a schemer. Mandelson is supremely proficient at that. He is, if not the chief architect, he's certainly the chief designer of the new Labour project. He gets things done. He's a risk worth taking. Now, if that is the equation, Tom, your response?
The risk is not worth it because of his history with the cabinet, with the British people, with his history with Epstein. It's not worth the risk, because even if he's top-notch negotiator and that kind of stuff, the stakes are too high.
9 months ago, Tom, 9 months ago, Mandelson was standing in the White House beside Donald Trump, having secured the first of the trade deals. Now he's standing in utter contempt. But back 9 months ago, you'd have thought, wow, that's worked, we've got our trade deal.
Well, Donald Trump didn't even seem to know who he was, for a start, so I'm not sure how involved he was in the trade deal. And from my point of view, I would not personally employ someone who I can... I need someone you can trust implicitly to work for your country. And unfortunately, there wasn't that trust, but Starmer thought he could get away with it.
I think
Keir Starmer has shown to be weak and naive in his leadership, and that can be seen through all his U-turns he's made in the last 18 months. Every time he puts something on the table, he goes back on it. And it's the same again.
Tom, can I ask you, lastly, are you a fan of Emmanuel Macron?
There are certain things which I like, certain things I don't like. I wouldn't say I'm a fan, no.
So here's what I was going to ask you. And you're in a unique position to tell us. Who is more unpopular in their respective countries? Sir Keir Starmer in the United Kingdom or Emmanuel Macron in France?
Well, I'd say Keir Starmer is more unpopular than Britain than Macron is in France. Okay. Yeah, I'd say so, yes. I'd say so.
And what's leading the local news? What was the local bulletin last night when you went to bed, or what's on the front page of Le Matin or Figaro or Paris Match or whatever it might be?
Well, I'd like to be able to help you with that. I didn't watch the news. I was watching the rugby, the Six Nations last night.
Oh,
so,
my God.
I was more concerned than that.
Les Bleus are incredible.
Yeah, they did well. They did well. Ireland were disappointed, to be honest, but yeah, France did well.
It's going to be ugly, I think. Well, let's not say that. England are going to triumph next month in Paris. Well, we can all hope, can't we? Tom, do stay in touch. Fascinating having your perspective on that. Thank you very much for that. Graham, you're going to be the next caller. There are other matters, and you remember that trial, the Daily Mail, of course. People such as Prince Harry and Elizabeth Hurley and others giving and indeed Baroness Lawrence, for that matter, and others giving evidence again. Well, someone else is appearing in court. The headlights you're counting, Sir Elton will be counting the headlines, I think, tomorrow after you appear in court, and we'll look ahead to that after this. 9:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a government minister has rejected suggestions that Sir Keir Starmer needs to sack his chief of staff in the wake of the Peter Mandelson scandal. The United States and Iran are due to hold their first direct talks in 8 months as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear programme. And Sir Elton John's expected to give evidence later in the privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. LBC weather, cloudy, with outbreaks of rain pushing north, blustery downpours in the south, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A10 remains closed southbound just after the M25 junction at Ballsmoor Lane. It's following an accident that happened around 6:30 this morning. There are huge delays back to Cheshunt. All the surrounding routes are hardly moving at all. And there's a delay back onto the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. The A1's also very busy both ways to Apex Corner, but that's because of a problem with the traffic lights. In Marylebone, Portland Place is closed northbound, and that's because of a fire in a building. On the underground, there are minor delays on the central line and also on the trains. Avanti West Coast and London North Western services are delayed by about 15 minutes between Euston and Watford Junction.
LBC.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
People ask me, what's my good place? Checking out the food trucks on the weekend with my partner. And knowing that Pension B helped me combine my pensions into one easy-to-manage plan.
Tacos?
Tacos.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Straight back to your calls. There's a knock on the door, there's a ring on the bell, and it's a Labour canvasser, particularly if you're in Gorton, or certainly if you're any of those local elections, which is much of England, all of Scotland, all of Wales. What would you say to them? Well, I think the Labour Party's doing really well. We're getting to grips with migration. We're doing this, the health service. Well, I don't know about that. Graham in Newark. What would you say, Graham? Good morning.
Hello. Well, what I'd say to them on the door is, I don't know why you're on the door. Are you on the door for your interests? Or my interests.
I'm in the door. I'm going to play the role of the canvasser. I'm on the door, sir, for both. I'm in the interest because your interests are the interests of the Labour Party because we are fixing 14 years of Tory misrule, Graham.
Well, I would say I don't see that in Starmer because his apology came purely to save his own skin.
But he was let down. He was let down. He said sorry. He said sorry to the victims. The vetting procedures let him down. And now he's called for all the files to go to this big, powerful committee, Graham. He's done everything he can.
No, he hasn't done everything he can. Certainly, he's done everything he can to try and stop it. It was only when his own MPs hijacked him that he had to release all of the files. And I would say, look, when you started, Mr. Starmer, you said that it was going to be different, that it wasn't going to be sleaze. And then... you hired the king of sleaze, for goodness sake.
Yeah, but he told me he didn't know... Sorry. He told the Prime Minister that he didn't know Epstein very well. He lied and lied and lied, Graham. That's why you've got to keep your faith in Sakir, is what he'd say.
What I would say is, why don't you give Keir Starmer my telephone number? Because I know enough as a normal pleb, for goodness sake, to know what...
You know a bad un when you see him. Graham, thank you. I might play that role. Thank you, Graham. Have a good weekend. Cathy and Boreham Wood. Hello, can I count on your support for the Labour Party in the upcoming local elections?
Absolutely not. I want to know how much money Mandelson was paid in that job by taxpayers' money and what's being done to get the money back.
It's a six-figure sum. I think it's 100 or 200. Well, he did serve as the ambassador. I mean, he did a fantastic job. We got our trade deal because of his appointment. And then he lied and lied and lied and lied, Cathy.
I know, but so what are we doing to get the money back? even if it's to get the money back and give it to a charity for women that have been abused and mistreated.
But let's talk about what we are achieving, is what Labour would say. The NHS waiting lists are coming down.
Of course they would. Of course they're going to say, let's talk about what we are achieving. They always dodge the question.
You'd have no time for them at all, I sense, Cathy.
Like any politician, they never answer a straight question, do they?
Cathy, thank you. I'll play the role of Labour canvasser again in a moment or three, but let's go to other matters. And what's called the second lead, or the second most important story for the Daily Telegraph, is an intriguing one of an NHS hospital trust recruiting a nurse whose role is to support families where parents are close relatives. It's the Bradford Teaching Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust advertising the position for, and I quote, close relative marriage neonatal nurse slash midwife. That the successful candidate would, quoting again, provide comprehensive care and support to families who have recently had a baby and are close relatives. Cousins, uncles, aunts. That is illegal, isn't it, to marry your uncle or your aunt? That has to be illegal. Or other closely related family members. Oh, here we are. Sorry, under text. It is illegal to marry your brother and sister in Britain. Weddings between cousins is allowed. But are some folk marrying their... Marrying your aunt? Okay. The nurse will be tasked with ensuring the well-being of neonates, particularly in the context of genetic risks and health challenges. Now, it is, thank you. Yes, I thought it was legal. You can't... Not that I'm sure my aunt would want to... Well, she's dead, but my aunt would never have wanted to marry me anyway. Not particularly fond of me. Ministers have faced mounting calls to ban cousin marriage. I only used to get a 10-shilling note at Christmas. Ban cousin marriages in recent years. Richard Holden, who is a Conservative, introduced proposals to outlaw the practice back in 2024. The background: in three inner-city Bradford wards, almost half, 46% of mothers from the Pakistani community were married to a first or second cousin. Right. Dominic Wilson is a professor and consultant neonatologist and professor of medical ethics at the University of Oxford. What level of concern do you express at these marriages between cousins? Professor, good morning.
Good morning. So I think it's important to put things into context. So one of the things we know very well about marriages between people who are related is that it increases the risk of genetic illness. We all carry a risk of our children having congenital problems. If you marry your first cousin, that risk is doubled. But let's put it in context. So everybody has a 3% risk chance if they have, when they get married, they have a child, that their child will have a congenital illness.
Well, that's if I marry a complete stranger. That's at 3%.
If you marry a complete stranger,
right. Okay.
It increases to 6% if you marry your first cousins.
Right.
But that does mean that 94% of those children are not affected by serious congenital illness. And the difference between the base rate and the rate in first cousins is 3%. So although it's increased, we need to put it into context. How should we respond to that? That's the important ethical question. And the question that the suggestion that's been made recently is that first cousin marriage should be banned. But there's several reasons why that it seems like an overreaction or an inappropriate reaction. So one reason I've just pointed to is that the difference in risk is relatively small. You'd have to ban, you'd have to stop 30 couples from marrying to prevent one extra child with a birth defect.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, if we might think we're doing it for the sake of the children who are going to be born, but those children would not ever be born if we prevent cousins from being married. So there isn't any child who will be healthy who would otherwise have had a genetic illness.
It's a game of risk then.
So the important thing to note is that when people have an increased risk of genetic illness, and there are people who have a much higher risk than first cousins, those are people who already have a child with a genetic illness. We don't say to them, you mustn't have any more children, or you must split up, you mustn't stay married. We say, we need to support those individuals. We need to give them information and support them in making decisions. And the same principle applies to those who are related, not just first cousins, but related in lesser ways, to help them to have information to make decisions. And that's what this suggestion is of a specialized nurse who can support these families.
I wonder if there's a degree of family pressure or coercion
So one good concern about in relation to these marriages is whether the individuals are being coerced or pressured into marriage. And that's important to address. But in a sense, that's completely separate from the question of cousin marriages, because people can be pressured into marriages between unrelated individuals, the individuals who've been marriages that are arranged. So we have good reason to try and stop that. But banning first cousin marriage won't stop arranged marriage or wouldn't stop coercion.
Grateful for your input. Thank you. Dominic Wilson, consultant, neonatologist and professor of medical ethics at the University of Oxford. Now, the background is that cousin marriage in Pakistan is a deeply rooted tradition. Nearly two-thirds of marriages involving relatives, and this is to preserve family wealth, strengthen kinship ties, and maintain what's called cultural continuity. If you look around the world, if I take you to the United States, first cousin marriages, roughly half of the 50 states of the United States, roughly half do ban it, which means roughly half do not. What's the justification? Well, in December 2024, a controversial speech in Parliament by independent MP Iqbal Mohammed, he said,
"The reason the practice is so common is that ordinary people see family intermarriage overall as something that is very positive."
Andrew in Barnsley on this. Andrew, your reaction. Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Hello,
well,
sir.
When I was listening to that expert trying to minimise it, about 10 years ago, I've been in transport all my life, and I was delivering parcels in the Bradford area, door to door. And when we were doing the districts with the Pakistani people, we were delivering van loads of, like, nutrition from the NHS. The same as my mum had when she was at the end of the cancer, you know, to give them a bit of food and nourishment.
Yes, absolutely.
It must have cost a fortune. And the quantities, Nick, were unbelievable. They were like half a pallet to one house.
And were you delivering to children, or who were the recipients, Andrew?
I presume it were kids, because when the parents came to the door, and often so one lad had them put under his carport, and it were nearly full of them. It was as if he wasn't bothering to use them, as if the NHS were churning them out to him, and he wasn't really, the kids weren't really that, they probably didn't like him or whatever.
And you'd do this every day, every working day, would you?
Yes, in our depot, which was at Leeds, you could see these sort of Pakistani rounds, and it's all set out on the floor of the warehouse, and the vans that were going to go there, there were like loads of this stuff from, you know, the big medical companies that supply like the fat drugs and that. We must be talking billions.
But did anyone ever question why the heck are we doing this, or it was just practice and everyone did it?
Well, yeah, because we knew about the cousin marriage. There were a young lad from Huddersfield, a nice young lad, Asian lad, and I worked with him, and he were married to his cousin.
Right.
And sadly, they'd had about 8 miscarriages. She couldn't get pregnant. They were right upset. He kept getting him down.
Yeah.
And I never said it to him, but I used to think to myself, I bet it's because it's your cousin, and she just can't carry.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
His cousin,
yeah.
It's not just the first time. You've got cousins marrying, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, Andrew, and thanks for sharing your experience. Have a good weekend. That's the reality, literally out on the roads and in the area, because Andrew did it for a living. I've just been talking numbers with that senior medical clinician. Ruth says, I'm a statistician. Yes, a first-generation first cousin marriage is double the average rate, but what of second-generation cousin marriages and third generation? What is the compound rate of genetic illness? I can tell you it's not just double, it'll be a lot more than that. Someone here, Joe, asks, what is the cost? Well, I've just been discussing this. What is the cost of all of this? Surely it needs to be banned. Well, we would be a bit of an outlier. I don't think anywhere else in Europe, well, certainly in Western Europe anyway, does it. Ban it, that is. About half of the United States does. We'll continue that conversation. Also coming up after the news. More music than Jordan today, I think. it's Elton John. Sorry, Sir Elton John will be in the High Court in that case against the Daily Mail. We'll have a legal look ahead. It's 9:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC Newstime. Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has rejected suggestions that Keir Starmer needs to sack his top advisor in the wake of the Peter Mandelson scandal. Mike Tapps told Nick that Morgan McSweeney has helped to turn the Labour Party around and get elected. The US and Iran are due to start talks in Oman later as Washington looks to pause Tehran's nuclear programme. President Trump's repeatedly threatened military action if no diplomatic solutions found. And Sir Elton John's expected to give evidence later in the privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He joins the likes of Prince Harry and Liz Hurley in bringing legal action against Associated Newspapers Limited. A&L denies any wrongdoing. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north. Blustery, sometimes thundery downpours in the south. A high of 12 degrees.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
The Mandelson affair has exploded into one of the biggest political crises in more than 50 years, calling Starmer's judgment into question and sparking a backbench revolt from within the Labour Party as MPs demand answers. Join me, Lewis Goodall, as we cut through the headlines and ask, is this Starmer's Partygate moment? And with Andy Burnham relegated to the sidelines, who would be next?
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £25 million.
Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Idle money chills in your current account, parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs, oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
If anything shows the power and reach of LBC, this is the next conversation. Because no sooner did we put the phone down on that very experienced medical professor about the impacts of first current marriages in Bradford, then the phone goes and we speak to Mo in Bradford. And I understand, if I've got this right, that you are a product of a cousin marriage. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. It is, that's right.
Morning to you. What's the background? How common is it? How do you feel? Are you well?
Yes, I'm well. I'm well. It is very common. I mean, the statistics that, you know, it's upwards of 50% are about right.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it does increase the odds of genetic diseases. You know, if you look at things like special schools in Bradford, you know, people of Pakistani extraction are far overrepresented.
Right.
In places like that. And it's true, but...
Did you ever ask, so roughly your age, you're in your 20s, 30s, what sort of age are you?
I'm in my early 40s.
Early 40s, okay. Have you ever had a conversation with Mum and Dad about their thinking behind it?
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's a deeply held belief. It's something that they've not known any different, and they feel quite strongly about it. I don't. I think it should really stop. You know, I mean, I think...
Mo, why do you think it should stop? By the way, I think you're right, by the way, but I'm just interested in why you think you should.
Because of the number, doubling somebody's risk of genetic illness, that's absolutely massive. Why would you want to take that risk? You know, your children are the most important thing in the world. Why would you want to put them at any more risk than they would otherwise have to be at?
What, might I ask, are you married? Are you planning to get married?
I am, yeah. I've got three young boys. I am married to somebody from the Pakistani community. We're not cousins, and my boys are completely healthy.
Right.
But, you know, the statistics don't lie.
Would you have ever considered marrying a cousin?
No.
Why?
Because, you know, for the aforementioned reasons, because if it's going to put, you know, the products out of that marriage, those kids at risk, well, why would you do it?
Can you help me? If the United Kingdom was to go the same way as roughly half of the states of the United States and say, actually, we're going to make this illegal, what would the reaction of some Pakistani community in Bradford be?
Well, I think people would take it as an attack, wouldn't they? They would just take it personally. It's a very sensitive subject. Obviously people have got kids that poorly because of the decisions that they've made, and having to own those decisions. I mean, can you imagine how hard that must be to actually admit, okay, well, you know, I've made a conscious decision to marry my cousin, or I've sleepwalked into it because, you know, the community or my parents have pressured me.
Yeah.
You know, taking ownership of that decision, it would make them feel so guilty.
And lastly, when you talk with your parents or others, and you express, look, I have to say that there's real concerns over this practice outside of our Pakistani community. What's their reaction? Are they surprised? Are they angry? Do they reflect on it and think, oh, right, actually, there might be a point? How do they respond to criticism?
It's a begrudging acceptance.
Really?
You know? What's happened has happened. I think the picture going forward will change because this whole institution hinges on a confluence of factors.
Yeah.
So things like arranged marriage, the sort of historical and cultural kinship ties, you know, but all that is sort of dissolving because,
well, it's evolving, isn't it? Because you must stay, obviously, to your Pakistani heritage, of course, but you are going to evolve probably more into a Western way of life. More generations are born in Bradford. That's just a natural progression.
Exactly.
But
the one last point that I want to make is that when a cousin gets married to a cousin, right, it takes those people out of the marriage pool. Okay, so when this happens, like as an institution in places like Pakistan, there's very little people outside of that pool who get married freely to somebody other than their cousin. Do you see what I mean?
I see exactly what you mean.
Yeah, you know, it takes people out of that pool. So it's very easy for this institution to crumble when people start marrying outside of their cousins.
I've really enjoyed our conversation. Best wishes to your wife and to your family, and indeed not just your children, but your whole family. Mo in Bradford, goodness me, that shows that LBC doesn't getting straight to the heart. Really appreciate that call. We'll have more. A lot of people want to have their say on that, and you will in a moment. But I have mentioned this story on a number of occasions. What do you call Liz Hurley, Prince Harry, David Furnish, Sir Elton John? Well, they're all called to give evidence in this High Court trial against the publishers of the Daily Mail. And the last of those, Sir Elton, is due to appear today. Let's turn to Ian Bloom, media law consultant, who's monitoring affairs in the High Court for us to give us an update. Why is Sir Elton there? What might we hear? What will it turn on? Morning, Ian.
Good morning, Nick. Well, we are, as you say, nearing the end of hearing evidence from the seven claimants in this case. And after Prince Harry himself, maybe Sir Elton John, later today, will be the highest profile of the other six. The action has now actually been running for 2.5 weeks, and for some reason it seems to have slipped down the news agenda. Now, there must be other stories that are capturing the front pages. Nick, I can't think what they might be. Have you got any idea? Or perhaps we should both ask the Prime Minister. What do you think?
Something to do with Washington, but I can't put my finger.
No, me neither. Well, yesterday, David Furnish, married, of course, to Sir Elton, gave evidence of how distressed the pair were about the publication of deeply... deeply personal and private family information in the mail, and they concluded that it could only have been obtained by phone hacking and other illegal information gathering. The Mail, of course, firmly denied this. Mm-hmm. They claimed the stories they published came from legitimate sources, leaks from friends and resourceful investigative journalism. And that's how the case has gone so far. The claimants, some angry, some tearful, all distressed to an extent, have given evidence of how upset they were when personal details of their lives were splashed in the Daily Mail and the Mail on Sunday. And we can expect Sir Elton to double down on the points made by David Furnish yesterday. On this occasion, though, his lines will be his own and not penned by Bernie Taupin. The first problem for the claimants throughout has been linking publication of the stories that upset them to hard evidence of illegality by either the Mail journalists or the investigators they hired. Second problem the claimants have faced is the sustained attack by the Mail's counsel on the timing issue. Why, he kept asking, why did you all leave bringing proceedings for so long after original publication? And this major issue, were the claims brought outside the statutory limitation period of 6 years, is one for the judge to ponder in due course, given the explanations he's heard so far. And soon, it'll be the turn of the Mail journalists and editors to take their place in the witness box and be robustly challenged about why they engaged and paid investigators to obtain information about these celebrity claimants. And at least it should help brighten a dark and very miserable February, shouldn't it?
Ian, lastly, timeline?
Well, it's set down for, in total for 9 weeks, meaning it'll end at the end of March. I think it'll end a bit earlier than that. And then, of course, the judge is going to consider the evidence he's heard over those several weeks. I don't expect a decision until later in the summer.
Ian Bloom, media law consultant who's monitoring those that cases and those events. Thanks for all your input, Ian. We're asking you this weekend, is it 48 hours to determine the fate of Sir Keir Starmer? Because Labour canvassers, MPs and their colleagues and party members will be banging on doors and ringing the bells. George is in St Albans. If your door rang, bell rang or door knocked, what would you say? Good morning.
Yes, hi, Nick. Good morning. I would say to them that at this point in time, they need to get behind Sir Keir, and I'm going to tell you why.
Yes, please.
From first of all, in my opinion, I think he's actually a decent human being, okay? And from what I've seen in terms of his intent, he wants to govern, as opposed to, you know, where we've got with other political options at the moment, none that I can see are actually ready
to put in the hard yards.
Well, he's trying to solve the problems. He's putting in the hard yards. He's doing the trips to China. He's doing the trips to India. He's trying to negotiate all of these deals. Now, hang on a second. Nick, hang on a second.
14 U-turns, mate.
Look, all of this is true. I would say to them that we are going to hold them to account. So they come to the door, tell them what you want. We want these issues in the NHS fixed. We want the boats crossing sorted out. We want the high streets back up and running. We want the business rates reduced. And I understand all this. Other options at the moment are not ready to govern. Mr. Nigel Farage is not willing to do the hard yards in terms of governing. Kemi Badenoch and the Conservatives are still far too tainted. They haven't got their acts together. I think at this point in time, we need to work with Sir Keir. Now, the other thing that we haven't thought
of, there were reports of open plotting in the tea rooms on Wednesday among Labour MPs, George. Presumably that makes you furious, that you would say to them, get back to work and cut him a break.
So here's the other thing that we haven't considered. We've got a very big gorilla in the White House who's causing chaos globally. Mm-hmm. And I know that the issue with Mr. Mandelson and all of that is highly upsetting. Assuming that there was some pressure, and I don't know if there was or wasn't, to have him with Donald Trump, and maybe Sir Keir looked at this lot and said, well, I think this is what I need to do. If it was an error in judgment, I'm going to take him at face value that he apologised yesterday and he made an error in judgment.
But doesn't that speak to him being incompetent, lastly, that he took him at face value? He's a barrister, George.
Well, at this point, again,
not a journalist like Boris Johnson.
Again, at this point in time, I think until someone else comes that shows better credentials, better willingness,
But why are Labour doing so badly in the polls, lastly?
Well, everyone's got opinions, I guess.
All right. Everyone's got opinions, everyone's got views, and George, I'm grateful for yours. We'll have more on that. We will come back to those cousins as well, the nurse that's being appointed in Bradford. At 9:45, LBC News headlines then, it's Dominic Ellis.
A government minister's rejected suggestions that Sir Keir Starmer needs to sack his top adviser in the wake of the Peter Mandelson scandal. The US and Iran are due to hold their first direct talks in 8 months later as Washington looks to curb Tehran's nuclear programme. And the Home Office says nearly 60,000 illegal migrants and criminals have been deported since the 2024 general election. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, blustery downpours in the south, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue in North London around Enfield. The A10 remains closed southbound, but it's now closed from the M25 junction. It's causing delays on the A10 northbound as well, and also back onto the M25 from junction 26 at Waltham Cross. But all the surrounding routes are hardly moving at all. But adding to the delay, Mollison Avenue is closed eastbound at the Hartford Road, and that's right nearby, and as a result, that's adding to these huge delays. In Camden, Delancey Street is closed westbound for some emergency works, and in Marylebone, Portland Place is closed northbound at Devonshire Street, and that's because of a fire in a building. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the District Line.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
If, as seems likely, Keir Starmer is now a Prime Minister on borrowed time, can you explain precisely why? And are you ever allowed to tell off other people's children?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star. Wow.
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
You know that feeling when your money is working for you? No? Well, make it. Open an investment account at XTB, make your first deposit and receive a free Rolls-Royce stock.
Rolls-Royce?
That's right. Own one of the best performing UK stocks this year for free. And if you like it, you can easily buy more stocks and ETFs with 0% commission. Join XTB and let your money work for you.
Your capital is at risk. Investments above €100,000 are charged at 0.2% commission. FX fees may apply. Limited availability. T's and C's apply.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it.
Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
OK, David, I'll come canvassing to you as if I was a Labour politician or canvasser in a moment. And, Mohammed, I'm going to talk to you about the idea of first cousins marrying and the problems it's causing in Bradford. But before all of that, you know how often we talk about business and how important it is and how to stimulate business, particularly in the first hour of the show when we do our regular look at the world of the city? Well, something new is entering the world of business and, indeed, a new podcast.
Joel Dommett, shall we tell this wonderful lot what we're about to do?
Yes, we should, Ben Shepherd, especially because we want you to come along for the whole ride.
We do. We
us, me and him, are going to start a brand new business.
And he, Ben Shepherd, and the other bloke, Joel Dommett, is not here. But Ben Shepherd, of course, a good friend, and I appear regularly on the show he does with Kat over at This Morning. We turn the tables around. You're in our studio.
Lovely now to see you.
Right, what's this all about? What's the business, Ben? What's the idea behind it?
So essentially, it's the podcast that tracks the journey of Joel and I launching a male skincare line. The two of us.
What a good idea.
Yeah, so there's lots of podcasts out there.
Has it launched, Ben?
Yeah. The podcast has launched. It's been fascinating, and people are coming along this journey with us. We are building a community of people who are following the journey, helping us make decisions along the way, what the skincare line is going to be called, the branding, what it's going to be like, all of those elements to it. And Joel and I essentially are learning our trade as we go by talking to Dragon's Den, Deborah Meaden, Sarah Davies.
Yeah.
We had Caroline Hirons on the other day, who is the queen of skincare. All these amazing, Trini's coming on next week, all these amazing business people and business women that have created business in different areas, guiding us and helping us with the decisions that we have to make.
To date, for you and Joel, what's been the biggest hurdle to clear?
The biggest hurdle to clear is just understanding how much there is to learn.
Right.
I mean, it is the scale of it. We have no experience of these things, so we really are beginning at the bottom. But that's the joy of that as well. As somebody like you, Nick, who's so curious about life and learning a completely new skill. My dad worked in business his entire life.
Oh, did he?
In finance. He finds it fascinating and hilarious that we're trying to do this. But we're surrounding... I think the thing is, surround yourself with the people that know what they're doing. And then our enthusiasm and blind joy about what we're trying to do. And happiness, like, we're keen to make mistakes, and we are. Is getting us from stage to stage. We don't know whether it's going to work, ultimately. We need to create a community that will support it and will look for it. But it's an incredible adventure trying to get there.
And I know you're well known for men's health and you Why skincare? What attracted you to that?
I think, well, both of us are looking after our health and wellness. Like you say, I do a men's health podcast as well, Built for Life, which is all about men getting
and
to...
And Joel, for 82, looks in great shape.
He'll love that. But Joel as well, but that podcast is all about men turning around and sort of saying, I want to look after myself.
Right.
I want to look after my health and wellness, which isn't just your physical health and wellness, but it's how you look and how you feel. We've benefited from having amazing skincare experts and makeup artists look after us through our careers. I have certainly.
Yeah.
I've got boys. My Jack is 19, who you know. My son Sam is 21. They're much more across talking about these sorts of things, looking after their skin. It's about longevity. If we can look after our skin and do the stuff that we've never bothered doing and our fathers never did, then maybe when we look in the mirror and we'll feel a bit more confident and we can go about our everyday life feeling like we can do the job better because you're confident in how you look and feel. Small changes will make a big difference. So it's what are we talking about? We're talking high-performance skincare, low effort, and a lot of fun as well.
The Businessman is the podcast. Before I let you go, were you ever worried about your own skin or the skin of some of the participants in a show that starts next week, The Summit? What's that? I've seen the trailers.
Ooh, 14...
I know you like to push yourself to the max.
Yeah, Nick, 14 members of the public climbing a mountain in New Zealand across 14 days. £200,000 on the line. I give them the cash at the start. Whoever gets to the summit gets to share what's left of the money. They have to vote each other off as they're climbing. There's strategy involved. There's epic backdrop. It's like we shoot it essentially where Lord of the Rings was made. And by the top, they're climbing through the snow line. They've got ice axes. They've got crampons. They're climbing up glaciers.
And are they working together or trying to shed each
a bit of both? So at
so
times...
So Claudia Winkleman here. It's like time, Traitors meets the 1% Club.
But trust me, her fingerless gloves wouldn't work on that mountain, much as all her fringe. It was extraordinary, breathtaking. I think it's twice the height of Ben Nevis's The Mountain, Mount Head, that they're climbing. It was jaw-dropping. It's an extraordinary show, and they are so courageous.
Ben, good luck with it. The Summit is the TV show. The Businessmen is the podcast. Ben Shepherd, of course, broadcaster, presenter, all-round good guy. You see him on This Morning. Good luck.
Best
of family.
See you.
Ben, thank you. Let's come back to our main conversation, which is the idea this weekend could be 48 hours in which the Prime Minister might or might not save his career. David in Uxbridge, someone knocks on your door and says, I'm from the Labour Party, can I count on your support? How would you react?
Well, certainly not. Well, thanks for taking my call, Nick.
Not at all, sir. Thank you.
But my point is that you have to look at the current Labour hierarchy and an organisation called Labour Together, which Morgan McSweeney and a lot of the top, like Wes Street and Rachel Reeves, Shabana Mahmood, they were all... And that was set up to depose Corbyn, really. And now they're the main players. And Mandelson was very integral to that. So I think we need to be asking not just Starmer, but their... You know, and some journalists as well, you know, a lot of like mainstream centrist journalists were very involved. So it was quite a cosy club. And if Labour are going to get credibility. These people need to be gone.
This is a really interesting idea, David. So it's not just damaged Starmer, it's damaged the whole new Labour project in your eyes.
Absolutely. And if you look at the way they did politics, it goes back to Tony Blair. And Tony Blair's in the Epstein files as well about
allegations in there. But on you go. Yes,
sorry,
David.
Nick.
That's all right. No, that's my job. Go ahead.
No, we need to really examine that right-wing cabal in the Labour Party, because I think they're corrupted.
What's the future for the Labour Party? Is it Angela Rayner?
Well, I don't know if I trust her either, but I think they need new leadership.
All right. David, I've enjoyed our conversation. I'm not cutting you off because of what you said. I'm cutting you off because I want to go to other conversations. David, have a good weekend. Very intriguing, the idea that the whole new Labour project is dented.
But this is a fascinating story about first cousin marriages in Bradford and a nurse being specifically employed by the local hospital trust, the local NHS trust, sorry, to work in that field. Mohammed is in Barnet. Mohammed, where are you with this? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. Good
morning.
Now, I personally believe cousin marriages are not a problem.
Okay.
I think on scientific basis, every marriage, every relationship,
well, it does double the possibility of a genetic birth defect.
But it's easy to say double. What is that double?
From 3% to 6%.
No, it's 2-3% is on your average marriage, and it goes up to 4-6% with first cousin marriages, which means 90% of cousin marriages, more than 90%, just like normal marriages between...
Yeah, but hold on, respectfully, as the statistician pointed out, as that continues, obviously that percentage will go up because the pool from which you are choosing is going to be very small. Do you see what I'm saying?
I understand that. I understand the claim. Firstly, I understand the claim. That's not been substantiated by scientists.
No.
Substantiated means that it's gone through a rigorous study, right?
You are a supporter of it, obviously, Mohammed.
Yes.
Why? Why does it work for you, Mohammed?
I believe that people should have the freedom to do that if they want to.
Okay.
And I'll give examples in cases where we don't consider the scientific evidence as a reason to ban something. Processed pork is a group 1 carcinogen. We don't ban processed pork.
Okay. Might I ask you, and you don't have to answer, have you married your cousin?
No.
Would you consider marrying your cousin?
I'm already married, so...
Okay.
But
you wouldn't protect it for the traditional, the roots of what it means to the culture?
It's not the culture. I think it's the freedom for people to choose.
Okay, Mohammed, I enjoyed our conversation. Thank you. Be well. Your best wishes, your family. Final minute to Ali in Croydon. Should it be this freedom to choose, in your view? Ali?
Hi there, yeah. I totally agree with the last caller, to be honest. You disagree, sorry, to say that.
Totally disagree, just to clarify.
I do, yes.
Go ahead.
I think it's absolutely a culture issue. I think it's definitely a cultural issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been born here in the UK, and when I went back for a holiday to Pakistan... like a few years ago, like when I was young, I'm my 40s now, and I was getting encouraged a lot, not by my parents so much. My parents were okay, they were like, you can sort of choose what you want to do, it's fine. They had no pressure on us. I was born in London, so it was a bit different.
Mm.
I think when I went to Pakistan, there was a lot of encouragement.
What would they say? Tell me how they try and encourage you, Ali. What were the words they used?
They'll say, oh, you know, because the girls are pretty anyway. So they'll say, okay, you marry your cousin when you get older. She's like this. She'll cook for you. She's very nice. And the beautiful girl, then keep it in the family. And then, like, you kind of get pressured when you're young. But then when you grow older, you kind of think, no, like, maybe I won't. And
Would you go, lastly and briefly, Ali, would you go as far as to ban it?
I would go as far as to say it is an issue, and I think we should encourage education. I would say encourage education to try to get people to look outside the box.
You had the last word, Ali, last word of the week. Again, best wishes to your family. Thanks for your input. I'm done for today. If you missed any of the show, listen back from our free Global Player app or the LBC app. You can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's me for the week. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, do have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I got a message last night from a very old friend of mine who is a decades-long student of Chinese, the language, and China, the country, Chinese history. He wrote, I've been meaning to tell you, I keep forgetting to mention it, no Chinese person I have ever asked has ever heard of May You Live in Interesting Times being a Chinese curse, which has sadly completely destroyed the opening that I would normally deploy on mornings like this. Now I understand why the Chinese think it's a curse to say, may you live in interesting times. Because whether you like it or not, these are interesting times. And whether you like it or not, the prospect of another changing of the guard at Downing Street, just little more than 2 years after we thought that it was over for good, is back in play.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, ministers have moved to defence Keir Starmer following suggestions he needs to sack his top team following the Peter Mandelson scandal. Sir Keir Starmer's admitted he knew of Lord Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, but says he repeatedly lied about the extent of it. Backbenchers are now pushing for Sir Keir to change his advisers in wake of the saga. Labour MP Ian Byrne says despite apologising, the Prime Minister is still under intense pressure.
He's lost a huge amount of confidence within the parliamentary Labour Party. He's lost a huge amount of confidence within the country, and he's in a very perilous political situation at this moment, and he needs a miracle. He needs something to turn it around.
Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing in relation to Jeffrey Epstein. Talks have started in Oman this morning between the US and Iran as Washington looks to pause Tehran's nuclear program. President Trump has repeatedly threatened military action if no diplomatic solutions found. Iran says it is open to discussions around its atomic program, but has ruled out talks over its missile defences. The Home Office says nearly 60,000 illegal migrants have been deported since the general election in 2024. 15,000 people have been removed since then, while 43,000 others have left voluntarily. More than 65,000 people have arrived in the UK on small boats since Labour came to power. Migration Minister Mike Tapp has told LBC deportations will be scaled up.
We made promises to the public that we'd restore order and control. This is the highest in a decade. It's up by around 30%. On the previous government. What we said to people is, if you're here illegally, we will work hard to remove people. We'll ramp it up. When countries aren't taking people back, we will threaten visa impositions, which basically means we'll stop their visas for coming here.
A review of the drug statins suggests that they're far safer than previously thought. A study by Oxford University found no increased risk of listed side effects, such as memory loss and depression. Around 8 million people in the UK are thought to take the drugs to lower cholesterol, cutting the chance of heart attack or stroke. And the UK's biggest mortgage lender says the average house price has risen above £300,000 for the first time. But Halifax says wage growth has outpaced house price inflation since 2022. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 5 at 10,303. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, some blustery downpours possible in the south. Later, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, for which I should thank you. I don't think I mentioned it yesterday. 80,000 more people are tuning into this programme than during the last calendar quarter, which is frankly ridiculous. But obviously, with mortgages to pay and a growing family, it is something to which I remain infinitely grateful to you for. What's the best headline of the morning, do you think? They are all circling similar territory. Arguably, they're all circling the corpse, somewhat prematurely, of Keir Starmer's prime ministerial career. But this is from The Guardian, and I thought I'd turn first to a left-leaning newspaper just to be clear about the extent of the problem, lest there be any doubt. It's tragic that a decent PM will be brought down by Mandelson's sleaze, writes Polly Toynbee, one of the grand dams of liberal journalism for decades now. In fact, quite possibly the grandest dam of all. But it's a matter of when, not if. You sort of have that in your left hand, and then in your right hand, Will's contribution. Considering the calibre of who wants Starmer gone, I'm starting to want him to stay. I know exactly what you mean. It's a sort of form of contrarianism. I find myself thinking more this week about Boris Johnson than Henry VIII, which is not a happy place to be. But that list we ran through yesterday of all the things that people now adamant that Keir Starmer has to go for the crime of believing a liar, who all believed liars. You'd think, wouldn't you, if you'd fallen for Boris Johnson's countless calumnies and corruptions, if you'd defended them, if you'd excused them, if you were still pretending that he wasn't fired for a succession of hideous transgressions and was fired, or indeed dispatched by his own members for having a slice of cake or a glass of Prosecco, if you were still subscribing to all that bilge, you'd think that you might have developed enormous sympathy for gullibility. Imagine being a supporter of Brexit and Boris Johnson, and suddenly now, in Keir Starmer's case, being convinced that gullibility is a terrible, terrible crime. It's a career-ending fault, gullibility. Say people who told you Brexit would be brilliant, Boris Johnson was a stand-up guy, Liz Truss was an economic genius, and austerity was a necessary response to the global financial crisis of 2008. Are there any more gullible people, I wonder, in the world today than those who thought that Donald Trump would be good for the UK, never mind the United States, or that Brexit would make Britain better? Just observing that, because it's meaningless, really, in the great scheme of things, pointing out the hypocrisy of hypocrites is a thankless and pointless task. But it did remind me of one thing when you look at Trump and Johnson. And I apologise for directing your attention to both of them so early in the morning while your breakfast is yet to settle in your duodenum. That was probably biologically inaccurate, actually. But it's all about quantity, not quality of scandal, isn't it? I mean, if Keir Starmer had sent Wes Streeting or, I don't know, Lisa Nandy to Balmoral to lie to the king, do you think his career would be over now? I actually think it would be, because it would stand out so violently from the rest of his leadership, from the rest of his political career. If Keir Starmer had suffered the resignation of not one but two independent advisers on ministerial ethics, because they were so disgusted at his contempt for ethics, his career would actually have been over. It's like Donald Trump. It's quite hard to explain this, but I think all you've really got to do is outline the parameters of it, and it all falls into place and makes sense. You know that many of the things... Do you know what Donald Trump's done today? He's shared a social media post that portrays the Obamas, Michelle and Barack Obama's heads transferred onto the bodies of apes. The single, or arguably among the single most racist tropes in human history. And the President of the United States is just dropping it with absolute confidence and impunity with the in front of the entire world. That, correct me if I'm wrong, that would have been career-ending 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever you want to say. And of course, this is what is so interesting about Starmer. For the avoidance of doubt, I think he is in very, very potentially career-ending territory. But it's important to highlight how, on the one hand, how ridiculous it is, but on the other, how desirable it is that we actually go back to a world in which transgressions are punished, and sometimes even unfairly, because to punish transgressions is infinitely preferable to unpunishing them, or to not punishing them. There's no point arguing with it. It's just true. Keir Starmer stands accused of believing a liar, and the people who are baying for his blood most violently and most loudly are the people who are still living with the shame and humiliation of believing the biggest liar ever to occupy a position of power in this country. And they believed him when he did much worse things than believe a liar. They believed him when he sent Jacob Rees-Mogg to Balmoral to lie to the late Queen. They believed him when he lied about breaking laws the rest of us were required to observe during COVID lockdowns. He lied to us about the decoration of his own flat. He lied to his editors about his own godfather. But it doesn't matter. I'm just pointing out that Starmer, from one angle, is in an almost